Hello and welcome then to this, the Random Wrestling Review big preview of WrestleMania 40. This is the first time this podcast has ever done a preview of anything. We're not the Random Wrestling Preview, we're the Random Wrestling Review, but we're going to do a preview today anyway, despite our name. And we've got three wonderful guests to join us to talk about this and debate, no doubt, our feelings going into WrestleMania. First of all, we have got the rock star himself, Alex Kirkman. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm okay, thank you very much. I'm a bit achy today because I've just been on a big long run, but I'm nice and chilled out now, ready to go, ready to debate.
I was going to say, you didn't sound convinced that you knew how you felt, to be honest.
I'm just tired.
That's no good, Alex.
No, it's not good. And do you know what? I shouldn't be tired because there's someone who you're going to introduce soon who should be a lot more tired than I am.
Well, I'm assuming it's that man is the polar bear, because it's got to be coming time for you to be... oh, what's the fucking word that's gonna do my head in? Damn it.
I can't.
That's the one. No. I was gonna say, oh no, I still can't think of it, whatever. Matt Roberts, how you doing?
Do you know what the theme of exercise and running seems to be going throughout the entire pod? I have just come back from a PT session. I am absolutely knackered, but the good thing is you mentioned the magic word WrestleMania, and now I am fucking hyped up. Let's go. Let's talk about it.
I was going to say, and this was supposed to be the joke. Surely, Matt, you're the one who's most tired, because it must be time of the year when you're about to hibernate, being that you are the polar bear. But of course, that didn't come across because I couldn't think of the fucking word, could I? So actually, I think who Alex was talking about was our third guest, a man who hasn't been on the pod for I don't know how long, because we've had a strange schedule and, you know, some episodes recorded ages ago and were only aired a few months ago. But it is Tom Smith. Tom, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, very well. It's lovely to be back with the older, the polar bear, the northern powerhouse, the podfather back in the seat of things. So yeah, it's just lovely to be here, and I've been looking forward to this. As soon as this was mooted, and you said it was potentially going to be on a Wednesday, I looked through my calendar frantically to see if I was like, I think that might be a night where my parents have my oldest. So perfect timing. So yeah, buzzing to speak to you boys, and buzzing to talk about WrestleMania as well.
We'll have to start recording on a Wednesday more often so we can get you back, Tom. Simple as that.
Well, yeah, I mean, potentially, yeah, every couple of Wednesdays. Yeah, maybe I could get back on it. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? I'm sure you'd all love that.
So, guys, we are looking forward to WrestleMania XL, I assume. I guess that's where I wanted to start, really, is getting our overall kind of just feelings about how much we're looking forward to it. I want you to give it a score out of 10 without telling us why. Really? So let's start with you, Alex. Where are you in terms of your excitement for WrestleMania 40?
I'm at about a 3.
Oh. And what about you, Matt?
I'm on a fucking 10. I'm a kid on Christmas morning.
And Tom?
I've got no fucking idea. No idea. Because, and I'll tell you what, I'm not going to go into specifics. I look at the card, I'm like, that looks great. Yeah, I can't really muster any enthusiasm for it that much. So I'm probably about, maybe a little bit more than old Rockstar. I'm probably rocking about a 4, maybe a 5 at a push. I guess indifference, I suppose. So kind of right in the middle of really looking forward to it and not looking forward to it at all.
Yeah, no. Is indifference not just the complete opposite of excitement for something? I don't know. I feel like you should be a 0, possibly, if you're indifferent. I don't know.
Maybe I'm...
Indifference would be like not applicable.
Well, no, I think if you're excited for something and then you're indifferent to something, they are the opposites of one another. I don't know that you can be half excited and half not, and therefore indifferent.
Okay, well, yeah, so in my job, I've done many surveys. I've written and published many surveys. So I think I'm that one right in the middle, which is neither agree nor disagree, neither excited nor not excited.
That's where I live on those surveys, definitely. They pretty much don't deviate from that third option.
Matt knows, those civil servants amongst us. Yeah, it's just it. Annual people survey, bang, middle, all the way down the middle. Fuck off.
Have to mention the people survey.
That's not just a thing in the civil service, guys. That is everywhere, mate. It's everywhere. Everywhere is so eager to be engaging with their staff and just like, leave me the fuck alone.
the only answer that deviates is, how confident are you that the results of the survey will be acted on? Not.
I mean, trading is my job, and we have the QR codes, for the surveys when we do certain courses. Never looked at them. Never looked at them. And I hope that my boss doesn't listen to the podcast, because I might get a bit of a rollicking, but no, I've never looked at them. Never.
And you're training the next generation of dildo testers. So how is that going to go down?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're right there.
But you're probably the git as well that after the training goes on about for about 5 minutes about how you really, you know, need the feedback and you love getting feedback and it really helps you and all that bollocks.
Yeah, but in my defense, a lot of the people who, or some of the people on these certain courses are quite higher up than I am. So I have to say shit like that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I've never looked at him. Not asked.
Anyway, Tinky, where are you, lad?
Yeah, I think I'm about six or seven, maybe. No, I'm gonna go six. I'm more excited than I'm not, but I don't know how much of that is just is WrestleMania, and we've been doing WrestleMania for 18 months, so it feels like I should at least get myself up for the one that's happening as we cover it. So yeah, I'm about a six, and I've been looking through ahead of this episode. I've been looking through the card, and so far there are 10 matches that have been confirmed for WrestleMania, as far as I can tell, although there may be some that I've missed. We'll find out at some point, I suppose. But the interesting thing is, obviously, we only know really where three of those matches are in terms of which night they're going to be, and those matches just happen to feature all the big names and all the big stuff. So why don't we start with the big names and the big stuff? And I guess there's really only one place we can start, which is the whole Bloodline, Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins thing that's going on. Before we go into it, how much of Raw and SmackDown and the build in general have you seen? Because I've got to be honest, my own viewing has been largely, first of all, via YouTube, and secondly, I've been sticking mainly to this stuff. There are one or two other bits and pieces I've been taking a look at, but the segments that I've been watching in the main are a part of this particular story. What about you guys?
Exactly the same. Like that has been the way I've watched basically WWE for the last year and a half, 2 years, has been just watch the Bloodline segments, specifically the Roman Reigns segments. Now, obviously, that has deviated a little bit because there have been some segments involving The Rock that haven't had Roman Reigns in. But largely, open up TNT Sports, skip forward till I see The Rock or the Bloodline, and then that's it. One thing that blew my mind, actually, you're going to get a lot of this from me, actually, because I haven't spoken to you boys for a while, but I did not realize that the Roman Reigns' entrance music is based on the Succession theme. Has anybody noticed that before?
Never seen Succession.
Oh, it's really good. It's really good. But and now the two songs are completely interchangeable now. I cannot remember what the Succession theme is. I always get the two confused. So that was just an interesting bit of trivia that no one cares about because none of you have watched Succession by the sound of it.
I tell you what gets me quite regularly about that song, though, or that music, is the fact that there is that tiniest hint of the Shield music as well.
Yeah.
And it kicks in every now and again and go, oh, what's going on? The Shield? Oh, no, hang on. It's part of his music. Damn it.
Yeah.
It really takes me by surprise every time.
It's great. It's great music. And what I find so funny about it, I listened to it the other day on Apple Music, and it's about 2 minutes long. So I'm like, my God, how many times do they fucking loop that? Like, they're really getting their streaming numbers up, I reckon, WWE on Apple Music, if that's what they're using. Because, yeah, it takes them a long old time to get down to the ring, doesn't it? But yeah, anyway, I sidetracked it a little bit. But yeah, that's how I've been watching, really.
Yeah, same as me, really. I used to watch Raw and SmackDown all the time, and then children come along, and trying to find 5 hours a week to catch up on wrestling, just it became non-existent. And I found out or discovered the WWE top 10 Raw highlights on YouTube, so I just watched that, and then if I hear anything about a certain segment, I will watch the full segment on YouTube. So yeah, it's pretty much the same. I've stick to the top 10 and then watch the full segments on YouTube.
You know, I have a friend who I work with who somehow finds the time to watch every episode on time before work every week. And the first thing he does when he logs on in the morning will be, did you see Raw last night? So I always have to watch it before I start work. So I will pretty much quickly log on and I'll log on like extra early, watch Raw. I mean, I'll typically like sort of skip through and then I'll tend to have it on in the background. SmackDown every week is, thank God it's not, you know, I can watch on a Saturday morning, watch that every week. Raw, will mostly watch the majority of it, but pretty much for the most part, I'm watching the shows week to week.
Yeah, impressive. One thing I'm finding, so the other night I woke up in the middle of the night and I couldn't get back to sleep, and it was about half two, 3 o'clock, and I went onto YouTube and they literally had just posted one of the segments from that week's Raw, and I watched it before the show had ended on YouTube. So I watched a segment from Raw before the show had even ended in real life. And then by the time I sort of started to fall asleep again, they'd added another segment to it that was like a follow-up to it. So, I mean, that's just a consequence of the crazy dad hours of sleep that you get. But that was kind of weird. I've never experienced Raw in that kind of a way. And plus, I kind of felt like it was like I was watching it live, because then I was going on Twitter, seeing people's reactions to what was going on and everything. It was pretty cool. And I guess those segments are what I want to talk about first, because those segments were the segments from the episode of Raw that we have most recently seen. So we are recording this on the 27th of March. The 25th of March, Raw was the one where The Rock beat Cody Rhodes up at the end of Raw. We haven't seen the SmackDown that took place on the 29th of March, even though this will go out, I believe, on the 31st of March. Lots of dates there. Apologies, didn't mean to make it so complex. But ultimately, we haven't seen the most recent SmackDown, basically, as this comes out. We also will not have seen the Raw or SmackDown that leads up to WrestleMania in the final week of the build. And the reason I want to start with those segments is because this was the first time that I legitimately was excited for what was happening on screen. Not to say that I haven't enjoyed some of the other things that have taken place on screen or found it entertaining, but I've not really in any way found those segments to make my WrestleMania enjoyment or excitement higher. Whereas this week's episode of Raw is the first time that I have really kind of, really got excited, or increased my excitement, shall I say, for WrestleMania. I know kind of where everyone sits apart from Tom. So I'm going to start with you, Tom, in terms of your overall thoughts on the build for, you know, Bloodline, Cody Rhodes and all the rest of it.
So I very much appreciate Alex's stance on part-timers coming back, like in terms of them just coming back and getting into the main event straight away. But there's maybe two, maybe three people that I can excuse that for, and The Rock is definitely one of them for me. I think him doing that is absolutely fine, based on the fact as well that he is genuinely a megastar across the entire world. So in order to get like the biggest eyes on your product, you've got one of the biggest stars in the entire world available, you're going to put him in there, you're going to put him in your main event. So I don't actually have any problem with that. What I do have a problem with is the confused way that it's been done. So going back to like his first kind of appearance back, like when the initial kind of Cody handing the title or the match to Roman Reigns to The Rock was done really badly. Then there was the really confused press conference that nobody really seemed to quite know what they were doing. And then we had the segment on Raw when The Rock did the Bloodline point wrong and did the whole kind of like still kind of half playing babyface, but having a specific issue with Cody Rhodes, which just seemed a bit weird, because in my mind you shouldn't really. But the part of the reason why I've never liked Adam Cole, for example, is that he's supposed to be a heel, yet he's constantly trying to pop the crowd for himself and get himself over, and that's very much what it seemed like The Rock was doing. But within those segments, there's little things that I love, like I'm loving the Versace vests. I'm love that he's brought those back. I absolutely love that so much. And up until that most recent episode of Raw, I felt like that's been the entire kind of storyline in a microcosm, in that The Rock's supposed to be the heel. He's calling himself a massive heel, yet he's still doing cheap pops. Like the Rock Show segment in Memphis, it was doing my head in as I was watching it. It was absolutely just doing my head in, because I was like, just go in there. If it's like your hometown, and this might make me sound like a dickhead or whatever, but you know, that's not going to stop me. Like, you should shit on them even more. Do you know what I mean? You should build them up to try and make them feel like you're going to pop them, and then shit on them. And I thought it was just, I just find it really, it's really self-indulgent and really crap. Then there was like the last like 5 minutes of the promo, I think, when he was talking about the belt and everything like that, and got really serious and saying Cody's blood is going to be on the belt. And I thought that was really good. And going into this week's episode of Raw, that's a whole backstage segment where he beat up, The Rock beat up Cody Rhodes, I thought was fucking brilliant. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. It built him up so much as a heel. Even at the beginning, when he's kind of fighting with Cody, and then he takes him outside and he says, "Ah, Chicago, you're perfect. But that's what you get, your pieces of shit," like that. Because when he said Chicago, you're perfect, I thought, oh no, he's doing it again. He's pandering. And then he kind of turned it on them. The bit where he's busted him open, that was great. The fact that it seems really violent. It kind of reminded me, I think the last episode I was on, or the last full review episode I was on, was the Undertaker AJ Styles Boneyard match. And we kind of talked about how, because it seemed really violent, even though it was just punches and kicks, it seemed really violent, and I felt the same. I love the fact they went outside and it was in the rain. Don't know why, it just made me think of like, specifically made me think of like Attitude Era and like old WCW stuff as well. We talked about it before, Tinky, again, about a Lex Luger beatdown that happened in the rain. Don't know, it's something about fighting in the rain that I just liked. And when there's a bit specifically that made me think, Rock, you still do have it, is when he he got Cody's blood on his hand and rubbed it through his hair. It's like he's got bleached blonde hair. Put the blood in his hair. Get it all bloody. Because then it looks even better. Think about like those Ric Flair bloody matches where he's got blood running through his hair. I just thought it was great. I thought it was a really, really good, properly solidified The Rock as a really detestable heel, beating up on a beloved babyface like Cody Rhodes. And I thought that was really good. But overall, I thought that I thought it was been a bit confused. And that's kind of what I said about the whole card overall. I look at it on paper, tag match with The Rock and Roman Reigns versus Cody and Seth, I'm in. You know what I mean? But I just feel like the way we've got there has not been particularly great.
So Tom, as you were talking there, I
fell asleep.
No, I started to realize what we the way we should handle this in particular, because there is so much to this, I think. And so what I'm going to do, Matt and Alex, I'm going to ask you for your overall thoughts on the story, but then I think what we're going to do is I'm going to take us through the main moments of the story, and we can comment on each bit, because I do think there's a lot to kind of take in and consider. So Matt, I know that you're probably the most positive. Obviously you were a 10. So in terms of this story, how much have you enjoyed it?
Thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, to borrow a phrase from the great one himself, in regards to how the full storyline has worked, to be blunt, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't. And I know this is not remotely, and I can even see the look on Rockstar's face, this is not remotely going to be popular. When it comes to stars like The Rock, throw the rule book out the window. It just doesn't matter. He is one of the biggest stars in the world, and for me personally, as far as wrestling goes, he is one of the for me, he's my pick for the best to ever do it out of everybody. Whatever metric you want to measure by, and everybody's different and we'll go with different things, I get it. But if I was going to say to somebody, yeah, well, you know, what's wrestling all about? That's the guy I would point up and say you need to watch. He has been nothing but ridiculously entertaining since he's come back. And not only that, but, you know, he's late 40s, 50s, something like that. And obviously he's jacked as all hell, and he's looking as good as he ever has done. He's not going to be doing this forever. This is potentially his very last run. The greatest of all time, forget Cena, forget Flair, forget all of them. The greatest of all time is taking time out of his ridiculously busy schedule to come back and do it once more. Every single time he steps in that ring, whether it's 30 seconds, 30 minutes, I am lapping up every bit of it, and it's just great. He looks badass. The whole final boss thing is so amazing. As a storyline as a whole, is it perfect? Absolutely not. But you know what? Again, it just doesn't matter. This is special. This is something that people are going to look back on 10 years from now and think, wow, what an amazing time. We are lucky. Done.
So it was telling, Matt, that you, when you talked about The Rock being the best of all time, the people you listed were Flair and John Cena.
I listed Cena just because they've been labeling him the greatest of all time, and then I just quickly thought of somebody off the top of my head. But yeah, because otherwise I'd be here for days, you know, listing names. But yeah, the Rock is the guy, the top of the food chain.
You chose those two though. That's really strange.
I wanted to kind of point something there that you said, and whilst I kind of said that he's one of the biggest stars in the world, I do think this career has hit the skids a little bit, and this is an obvious way for him to like almost give his ego a bit of a boost again, I think, by getting back in the ring and doing stuff like that. I just wonder what everyone's thoughts were about that, because I'm not saying that's definitely what's happened, but it's definitely something that's occurred to me, because he's not quite the darling, I think, that he was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he's not 2015 Rock when he was the highest grossing actor in Hollywood, is he anymore?
No.
I can't even remember the last film he was in. What was the last film he was in?
Was it the...
I know he did the one on Netflix with Ryan Reynolds. Was it Red Notice?
It might have been Black Adam.
Yeah, and that was a flop, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's, perhaps I'm being really naive here, and I'll admit to, you know, I'm blinded by the great one's greatness. Who knows? But he seems to me like a genuinely ridiculously nice guy, and I wouldn't have thought that he's coming back as for like an ego boost. Is he potentially trying to, you know, to mend his, you know, his acting career a little bit? But possibly. And I wouldn't say that's a bad thing, because, you know, he's made some missteps, and I think he's probably honest and smart enough to know that. So I've got no problem with it, and I hope he gets back to it.
So, Alex, what's your overall kind of feeling on it, giving you the lowest score in terms of your excitement?
Matt, big respect to you, okay? You're a nice guy, right? But I have to disagree with everything that you said there. Now, and I'm not going to talk about old wrestlers coming back because I've done it. I did it at Mania, for Mania 33, so I'm not going to talk about that.
I agree
with Tom. He is The Rock. So if The Rock's coming back, yeah, fair enough. But I think that the build for this Mania has been fucking atrocious. I think it's been atrocious. And I think The Rock, we're going to break it down, but I think The Rock has been terrible. Absolutely terrible. With the exception of Monday night. Monday night was really, really good. I really enjoyed Monday night. And it built a Rock versus Cody Rhodes match. That's what it built. All right. And that is all this build has been. And one thing that I've not liked about it is the champion who's been undefeated all this time is the fourth player in that tag team match, because he's not been on TV with the exception of Friday night. And Friday night SmackDown was good as well because Roman Reigns was actually on it. So he's not been on it. Seth Rollins is, again, I don't even think he's had a really good part to play in the build of the match either. It has all been Cody Rhodes versus The Rock. And if that's the way that they wanted to go, if it was Cody Rhodes versus The Rock on night one, and then the winner faces Roman Reigns on night two, I'd probably be sat here going, yeah, do you know what? It's been all right. It's not been that bad a build. I still think that The Rock has been poor. And I love The Rock. I've no issues with The Rock. He's not the best, but he's definitely one of the best. There's no doubt about it. He's probably the best talker, all right? But I think he's been embarrassing. And I think he's, with the exception of Monday night, for me, it's been like cringy to watch him. Just really cringy to watch him. I think the build has been terrible. It's not built this tag match. It's built a one-on-one match between Cody and The Rock. Cody Rhodes is fighting for the biggest title in wrestling on the night after. And there's been no build. There's been hardly any build for that. And I'll come on to my thoughts on that because I'm gonna say something massively controversial later on with regards to that match. But with regards to this tag match, I am not interested in the slightest in it. I'm not interested at all because the build's just been terrible. The build has been fucking atrocious, I think.
There you go then. So we've got the whole gamut of emotions, the whole gamut of opinions there. Love it. And I think this does warrant going through this in a step-by-step way, going all the way back to the very first episode of Raw of 2024. Day one, as they termed it, where The Rock turned up and cut a promo where he hinted that he wanted to be the head of the table. Basically, he said, you know, where am I going to sit? Am I going to sit at the bar? Am I going to sit, you know, in somewhere else? Can't remember where else he said. Or should I sit at the head of the table? Now, instantly, that got everybody thinking, oh, you know, The Rock's coming back. He's going to face Roman Reigns, blah, blah, blah. Can you even remember how you felt that time? I'm pretty sure, Alex, I can guess how you felt, because you probably were like, oh, here comes a part-timer coming into the main event.
Yeah, pretty much. Nailed on.
Matt, what did you think at that point?
Again, excited as hell. Again, it's The Rock. Just the most electrifying man in all of entertainment. I was like, great. Let's have him back. If he's going to go against Roman Reigns, happy days. Let's do it.
Sorry, I'll just preface something with regards to that. It was a main eventer, but I will say, yeah, it is The Rock, and I get that. But and if he comes back in a main event of a match, not a main event of an event, fuck me, a main event match of an event, I've no issue with that, just not for the title.
Tom?
Buzzing, absolutely buzzing at the time. I was like, oh, that's exciting, because it is before the Rumble had happened. So I was like, do you know what? If that's where they're going, they're great, because they can, if they're going to do a Rock Roman storyline, they can go back into the kind of the fam, that you know, the lineage of the Anoa'i family. They can dig deep into it. They're both good enough promos and good enough performers that they can make it work. And even if The Rock has lost a step or 20 going into the match, then I think that if they do enough shenanigans in it, they can get a good match out of it, and they could definitely build a good storyline out of it. I was buzzing instantly. I just want to show you lads this. This is incredible. My wife got me this for Christmas. Can you see that on the camera? What that is?
It's a
golden rockhead octopus thing.
Yes, it's a rocktopus.
That's so amazing. It's
the Rock's head with loads of tentacles underneath it, and it sits on my desk. And because I haven't been working, I completely forgot about it, but now it's popped on my monitor.
What a strange item that is.
It's wonderful.
I was very open-minded about it. You know, I put him in my dream, you know, not my dream, but my, you know, our fantasy booking for WrestleMania 40, which we did back in September as the main event against Roman Reigns. And I felt like you, Tom, they've got months here. They can build the story. They can make it make sense. There's no problem. The Royal Rumble, in essence, is a lottery, right? Anyone theoretically can win the Rumble. So if Cody doesn't win it, that's not illogical at all. That's perfectly logical that Cody wouldn't necessarily win it. So as long as they give Cody something else to do that will keep him occupied and placates the need for Cody to be in something important, then there is no problem. I know that not everyone was thrilled with the idea of The Rock facing Roman Reigns, or thrilled with the idea of The Rock being even in a match, in a main match. But for me, it was like, well, I was very much with you, Matt. Like, this is The Rock. If The Rock says to you, I'm available for WrestleMania, you don't say no. You know, like you go, right, we'll figure out how to put you in because you're The Rock. You know, he's arguably the biggest wrestler in the history of the business in terms of as a star. He's certainly the biggest wrestling star that still possibly could wrestle. You know, like, I mean, he's bigger than Cena. He's definitely bigger than Cena. I'm still perplexed as to why Cena came up in that conversation.
Even on commentary, they keep saying he's the greatest of all time.
But that's WWE. That's just as propaganda.
I know.
But anyway, yeah, you're not going to turn him down. But I also was very much at that point thinking, well, this doesn't necessarily mean this has to be for WrestleMania. There's nothing wrong with them dropping this hint so early and then doing something at SummerSlam, you know, later on in the year. Like, what's the problem? Maybe The Rock's available now, like on this night in January, and then he's not going to be available for a couple of months. They thought, sod it, we'll just start to tease it for a longer build, and then eventually we'll have him come back and they can do that thing. So for me, I was just very open-minded, like, let's see what happens and we'll go from there. The next big thing that happened was the Rumble itself, I suppose, with Cody winning the Royal Rumble. There were a few different candidates that could have won. I very much went into that Rumble thinking this could be won by Cody, it could be won by Drew, it could be won by Punk. I even could see Gunther winning, because I just felt like, especially as you've got two titles, the Rumble winner doesn't have to face Roman Reigns by any means. Like, you could even still go to Cody versus Roman Reigns and not have him win the Rumble. He could just win the Elimination Chamber and face Reigns that way. So I was like, there is any number of possibilities for this Rumble. And WWE in the end, though, went with Cody, and obviously they had Cody do a stare down with Roman Reigns. Now, at that point, I'm very much of the opinion that with Cody having won and him also kind of pointing up towards Roman Reigns, who was watching from like a skybox, they had to then go to Cody versus Roman. And I also felt with Cody having won and going into a second year of WrestleMania, and given the way that the first match happened, that Cody had to win that match. What about you guys, Tom?
No, exactly the same. They had to do Cody Roman at that point. I feel like maybe he shouldn't have won the Rumble in the first place if they're going to get themselves into this pickle, because I did kind of think that Punk could win it as well and go into Seth. So this is where the booking mess kind of started, really. And yeah, I think they probably should have done that differently and figured out another way of doing it, because by virtue of the fact that Cody wins the Rumble, having gone through the same process last year, they almost kind of like they have to put him against Roman at that stage. So when The Rock becomes available, they need to think of some other way of doing it. I think Alex said earlier about having the Roman on two nights, which he is doing now anyway, one against The Rock, one against Cody, makes perfect sense to me. I feel like that's how it should have been booked. Obviously, we'll get onto that later.
Cody versus The Rock, Cody and then the winner to face Roman Reigns.
Oh, no. So I would have done it the other way around. I kind of contradicted myself by saying that, because obviously you have your biggest stars in your biggest match in the main event, but I'd have kind of done Roman Rock night one, and then had Cody versus the winner of that. So you could have Roman Reigns beating The Rock on night one and then going into night two against Roman Reigns and won the title then. So they could have done it that way, but this is where it all starts to get a bit cunty. There we go, I said it.
The only thing with that is then it puts the champion at a disadvantage and the champion's a heel. So that's why I thought with Cody and Rock, Cody beats Rock at night one and then Cody fights Roman at night two. And it's
Title match against Roman on the line in the free
play? If The Rock's coming back, that's how I would have done it. That's it.
Matt, what about you after the Rumble?
Yeah, in all fairness, I can see that it definitely did start to get a little bit confusing. I'll admit that. I expected Punk to probably win, and as soon as Cody did, I thought, ooh, that's okay. That seems to be the way they're going. Where does Rock fit in? Don't know. Guess gonna have to kind of wait and see. But yeah, it definitely did start to get a little bit confusing. I will admit that. Yeah.
And Alex?
I popped big time when Cody won the Rumble. I wasn't expecting it. I thought that Punk was going to win it, especially when it come down to them two. I thought Punk was going to win it. And then even when Seth won it, not Seth, bloody hell, when CM Punk won it, no, fucking hell, fire. When Cody Rhodes won it, when Cody, So, and even when Cody Rhodes won it,
he didn't go wrong again. Fuck it out.
It's the Cleveland Cavaliers all over again, Tinky.
Yeah, the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland Clavicles.
Yeah. before we go, let's give Alex a moment to convince him. I love the fact that you went, oh, hellfire. I was a mate of mine who's half Icelandic. I once kind of said to him, like, what are swear words like in Iceland? And he was like, they're all like biblical. They're all like damnation and hellfire. And like, you wouldn't say like, oh, fuck off, because it's the verb to fuck is how they use it. They use that word in Iceland. So they would never kind of do anything like that. So yeah, you the fact that you went a little bit biblical with your cursing them was incredible.
Yeah, I did say fucking hellfire, not just hellfire, but and I'd see what you mean. I like it.
Let's never let Alex finish this sentence ever. Let's just prevent him from ever finishing the sentence. Who won, Alex?
Cody Rhodes wins the Rumble, and even then I thought he might have a program with Seth here, and I didn't expect him to point up and look at Roman there and then. And as soon as he did it, I thought I was well on board. I thought, right, this is me personally, this is what I wanted. I wanted it at 39 night two. Didn't happen. This is what I wanted for 40. All right. And for me, it got rid of any questions, any, right, you've got to tune into Raw, you've got to tune into SmackDown, and all this, I'd make the decision next week. It were no, I've won the Rumble, Roman, I want you. And I liked it. I thought I liked that, and I thought, right, that's where we're going. That's what we're doing. That's where we're going. So I liked it.
I think they could have stretched that out a little bit, because if memory serves correct, he kind of just, I think Seth was in the box next to Roman.
Yeah.
So they could have potentially added a little bit of uncertainty as to who he was pointing to. Do you know what I mean? If you had like Cole and then Graves kind of saying, oh, I think he pointed at Rollins, or I thought he pointed at Reigns, you could have at least kind of at that point added a bit of uncertainty to it.
For me, it was very clean, and I liked that, because it felt like actually there's a lot of other stuff that we need to figure out in the rest of the rest of WrestleMania, but this match feels like it's destined to happen. Like, I always said I don't think it necessarily has to happen, but it did feel like, and I got to a point actually with it where I was like, I still don't think it needs to happen or is necessarily should happen, but there is such a groundswell of wanting it to happen that at what point do you as WWE just go, oh, let's just do it, because it's what most people want. And I think that there's definitely something to that. So when they did it, I was like, okay, you know what, cool. I didn't necessarily think they had to go there, but now they've done it, it's very clean, it's very clear, this is what they're doing, they've set out their stall, and that's confident booking, and I like it. I like the idea that they were confident enough to just go, that's the destination we've got in mind, you were telling you were going to do it right now. And then we've got 3 months now to build this match, which is really hard to build a match for 3 months without them actually having a match in the middle of it. It's really, really difficult. But credit to them, they're going to try. Let's see how it goes. So at that point, I was excited by what we had left to come over the rest of the WrestleMania build.
I think telling the story of the Mania beforehand as well, it just made complete sense. Cody Rhodes wins the Rumble. I want Roman. Straight away, I want you, Mania. It just made complete sense.
Yeah, of course, and not only that, but I think going into it, you knew if Cody wins it, he's going to pick Roman, because that's the only thing that character could or should do. There was just no question that he was going to pick Seth Rollins for that match. So the night after the Rumble, Seth made a pitch to Cody, trying to convince him to pick him as the opponent, and Seth was trying to put over the idea of it being the Workers' title.
Fucking bollocks.
I gotta be honest, at the time I thought this was just them trying to stretch out the decision, and I didn't really understand why, other than to, as I say, kind of just be like, well, maybe they just want to do another week and then build it up, hype it up that next week on Raw Cody's going to make his decision. And I almost felt like it seems a little bit silly, because no one's going to fall for this, no one's going to believe for a second that this pitch from Seth is going to convince Cody. So I was like, fine, I get you might want to delay it, but it's not worth it. You're not going to get an extra bump by promoting the idea that Cody's going to give a decision next week. So I found it a little bit pointless, but that was just me. Tom, obviously you had a much more strong opinion about it.
Well, I hate the fact that they're acknowledging of it as being the workers' title. Do you know what I mean? I just think that's really fucking stupid. If he's going to do anything, he should be like, oh, it's the more prestigious title. But the fact that they kind of use that terminology and they say, like, oh, I'm a fighting champion, you'd be like, well, that means less to me because you've defended it loads of times. Do you know what I mean? Therefore, it's not as prestigious. I just think it's... I know Steven's got some very strong thoughts about this title and as the UTG and as to why. I think it's absolute fucking nonsense. Why they felt the need to create it is dog shit, and I just think it's crap and it can fuck off.
Alex, I was going to go to you first, but Tom jumped in, so what were your thoughts after this?
Sorry, Alex. Well,
no, it's all right. I mean, for me, if he gives him that option and he doesn't take that option, it completely lessens that title even more than it is now. So it's just rubbish. Just, I didn't know, I didn't like that bit at all. Didn't like that at all. Seth Rollins should have just gone, right, all right, put Cody Rhodes as Pit Roman, right, and win with the Elimination Chamber and done it like they did, but leave that bit out.
Matt, what about you?
Enter the Polar Bear. I'll be in a complete agreement with you guys as far as the title goes. I mean, Christ, I mean, even the defunct 24/7 title means more than this frigging world title is shit. But, you know, is Seth going to say that on TV? You know, he's not going to say, why would he pick this one? This title's dog shit. He's obviously not going to say that, is he? And in all fairness to him, and I've made no bones about what I think about Seth and his character and, you know, his overall gimmick, shit. This was a hell of a sales pitch. As far as trying to get him to pick him, and considering the history that these two guys have had since Cody's come back, I thought this was really good. And this is probably one of the better things that Seth has done over the last couple of months. So while I do despise that title and think it's a load of dog shit, this was the best use of it in ages.
See, I'm sort of a little bit between everybody here. The thing I liked about it was I did think Seth gave a good pitch. I just don't think he used the right terminology, or I don't even know if that's the right word. Like, I'm in agreement with Tom. I hated the insider nature of it. Oh, like, this is the workers' title. You know, I don't know whether he could have said this is the... I don't know if there's a better way of saying it, but what he wanted to say was, in some ways, I think what they were trying to do is say, this is the NWA title and the other one is the WWE title. But they couldn't say that because obviously they're not going to shit over their own product, right? Because the reason they wanted to do that is because they wanted Seth Rollins to be able to say, this is the belt your dad held. It's not, obviously, but that's kind of what they were trying to get at, is this is the belt that Dusty held as a champion. He never held that other belt. This is why you want this one. But I think they kind of were a bit messy in how they went about it. And I'm not sure if there is a good way of telling that in a non-insidery way than the way they did it. So I'm a little bit in between. But as I say, I just didn't think it was necessary as a pitch. Like, to Alex's point, if he makes the pitch and then Cody still picks the other title, it does make that belt look a bit shitter again. And also, as I said, no one's going to be convinced by this. At that time, I was very much like, Cody's picking Roman. He's got to pick Roman. There's nothing that Seth could say that would make sense of him picking Seth over Roman at this point. Okay, so then the SmackDown came, where everything really started to, completely fall out of place as opposed to falling into place. We had Cody Rhodes speaking to Roman Reigns in the ring and literally saying the words, I'm going to beat you, I'm going to take everything from you, just not at WrestleMania. That's what he said. He said, not at WrestleMania. And he said, he'd spoken to a lot of people giving him advice, but one person was here who'd also sort of spoken to him. And then The Rock came out. The Rock and Cody had a little moment where Rock said some words to him in his ear, and then Cody walked out sadly, and The Rock and Roman Reigns finished SmackDown kind of face to face, staring each other down. I'm going to go to you, Matt, for this one. What was your thoughts after you saw this?
Oh, I'm laughing already. I mean, let's face it, you don't get a nickname, you know, like the Polar Bear without being a bit of a dick. I mean, do you know, just to provide just a little bit of context very quickly, there was a YouTube video which may or may not been, you know, staged or whatever years ago, of when The Rock beat CM Punk for the WWE title at the Royal Rumble, and some fan went absolutely batshit, like ripped up a DVD case he had, threw it, and just had the mother of all tantrums. And I still remember that to this day because I thought it was absolutely fucking hilarious. And I knew that this was going to cause that very same reaction, which the slight troll in me does find ridiculously hilarious. And there was part of that which I thought was funny. And there was a video of somebody doing that almost exact thing. So for that, I found it funny. Now, at the same time, I mean, I literally was there sort of, well, people obviously can't see my face, but I was like, a perplexed sort of face thinking, okay, that's different. What the fuck is that? And where are they going to go? Because, you know, I won't lie. I was certainly surprised and thought, ooh, that's a bold move for him to sort of give up the Royal Rumble slot. That certainly is a bold booking choice. So I thought, okay. But then I have at least a little bit of faith in how things have been booked recently. So I was like, let's see where it goes and we'll take it from there.
Alex.
In my head, I was that fan. All right. I was that fan. At the time when I saw it, I was just like, whatever, just whatever. Like straight away, my interest gone, completely gone. Because again, the part-timer coming in and taking the main event. Now, again, I get it. It's The Rock. I'll concede that it's The Rock. It's got to be on the card. But to me, at that time, it absolutely made zero sense why someone would win the Royal Rumble, outlast 29 other people, then pick the main event of WrestleMania against the undefeated champion for however many days. The match that he won last the year before, if it wasn't for interference, why would he just go, I'll tell you what, mate, do you know what? I'll not do it on Mania. I'll do it on fucking Backlash or something like that. Rock, you crack on and get on getting main event, pal. You crack on. Absolute shit. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Complete nonsense.
Well, very quickly, do you mind if I just ask a quick follow-up to that? Just out of curiosity, Alex, right? Playing devil's advocate here, yeah. Would it have been any explanation that you would have found satisfactory?
No.
Any explanation? Yeah, and in all fairness, if the fact that you... that's fair enough. I appreciate
it. I'll tell you now, my favourite wrestler of all time, Chris Jericho. If that was Chris Jericho, I'd be pissed off. 100% I'd be pissed off.
Cool. No, I appreciate the honesty, mate.
But I also think that the reason there's no explanation that he'd have accepted is that there is no explanation that would work. It's not because he's being overly stubborn. It's just nothing that would work.
I'm not convinced of that, see.
Can you think of anything?
No, but I'm not a writer for one of the biggest wrestling companies in the world. I'd like to think that I like the way things have gone, but okay, they certainly could have done things a bit differently and a bit better. But the way I see it, I just think for a lot of people, I just don't think any explanation would have been satisfactory. So I think it's a bit of a lose-lose.
But that's the point, isn't it? Like, where is the cutoff there? Is it that people are being stubborn, or is it because there is literally no explanation? And I'm genuinely on the side of, and this is not an emotional thing,
yeah,
I just don't think there is a single explanation that would have made that logical sense for him to not pick pick Roman at that moment.
I think it's a bit of both myself, but again, that's me.
Tom?
But no, because at this stage, whilst I think, yeah, I, at this point, I remember watching it thinking, what the fuck was that? Like, what was that? This doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. In my mind, it was kind of going to be like The Rock was, in my mind, it's that The Rock was going to be like supporting Cody Rhodes or like in Rhodes' corner or something like that. But the fact they obviously did a U-turn off of, you know, based upon what we thought was going to happen because of that point up to the box and then basically saying that it was going to be Roman Reigns, I was just left in a bit of a state of confusion, if I'm being honest. I was like, I don't like this. This is crap. This doesn't make any sense. And I made Cody Rhodes look like a little bitch who was just basically was like, oh, okay, Mr. Rock. Yeah, you can have what you want. You know, I thought it made him look really weak. I thought it made him look really pathetic. And it was just crap.
Yeah, I think that was my big issue, is that actually Cody looked stupid walking away from that ring. And you could tell, actually, there was an attempt to tell a story already, or this was a legitimate feeling that Cody had, was as he walked away, he looked pissed off. He looked
disappointed
by it. And this is somebody who has, I think, for the last year, possibly longer, really done everything that's been asked of him in terms of any creative they've given him. He's done and performed really well and taken it exactly as it's supposed to be taken. This just didn't feel like he agreed or was happy about it.
I guess it's easy to do all of the creative they give to you when they're booking you to make you look really strong.
Well, that's true.
Can I go to, well, I want to go on the Cody thing for a second, actually. It's something I've been thinking of. I'm not the biggest Cody guy in the world. I would like him to win the title at WrestleMania. Like I think you said, Matt, just them stop going on about the fucking story. Just fuck off.
yeah.
But I think it's absolutely absolutely incredible that there is a baby face that is this, a pure baby face that is this over. It's blown. There hasn't been anyone like this since Hogan, has there? Like, even Austin, he was so over, the most over person ever, wasn't a pure baby face. I just think it's absolutely incredible. Like, what a fucking career. I was, me and Tinky, we were big mid-card Cody guys, weren't we? Saying that he was the luckiest man in the world when he got re-signed from WWE, that he went at the right moment. And fucking fair play to the,
it's fucking Stardust.
Yeah, like, it's incredible. Like, I thought we were gone past that age where you'd get that pure, 100% pure baby face.
What you mean by pure baby face? You mean he's
white meat.
He's white meat baby face. I mean, yeah. Austin was a baby face, 100% a baby face. He wasn't
kissing babies, shakes hands.
But yeah, you're talking about that.
He was an anti-hero, though, wasn't he, Brad? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I get it. I get what you're trying to say. It's an important clarification, because it's a big thing for me, that the idea that people say Austin wasn't a baby face. He was entirely a baby face. That he had a character that made him a harder edge, basically.
Yeah, but the fact that he's pure white meat baby face. I thought that wasn't possible anymore.
I tell you what, I think Cody is. So somebody was saying, one of you guys, or Stephen maybe, was saying about how he wears the red, white and blue.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah,
blonde hair, blue eyes.
Blonde hair, blue eyes, red, white and blue. And then you look at what he wears a lot of the time, and I was like, he is, without the face paint, Sting. He's Surfer Sting without the face paint. He looks exactly like him.
Wow. Yeah.
So I was just like, it's unbelievable, really. Obviously, it's quite topical given Sting's retirement recently. But yeah, that was sudden realization. It was like, he's just Sting without the face paint. It's crazy.
Do you know what? Just very quickly, you brought up a good point there. The fact that he is, that this is why I could possibly at least a little bit buy that he sort of stepped aside for The Rock, at least a little bit, because he is that ridiculously nice guy who does the good thing. Because, I mean, go back to the pop that The Rock had for when he said he was, you know, going to sit at the head of the table. Again, playing devil's advocate here, people went crazy for it. So I'm guessing that the thinking that they had was, oh shit, people want to see Rock versus Roman for the title at Mania. Whether that's right or wrong, I'm saying that that's what their thinking was. So Cody, going by that thinking, is going, well, the people really want to see Rock do this. So that's, again, like I said, not saying that that's perfect, but that I can kind of understand.
The thing I'm interested to know, though, is at this point, is when was this, let's say, right, let me, I'm trying to figure out how to word this or how to order the questions I've got about this particular bit. And we're only four steps into, I think, about a 9-step build to this. I did think this would go a long episode. But at that point, do you think that they were determined to go with Rock versus Roman? At the point that they did this promo, this segment, do you think that they were going, right, we're going Rock and Roman? That was their idea at that time.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Cool. So what the hell were they thinking giving Cody the win in the Rumble?
Oh, so sorry. I think that they didn't realise that this was an option until after the Rumble happened. So obviously, I think when Rock got appointed to the board at TKO, I think it happened on like the Monday or the Friday, after that. So I think that's when they realised. They were like, oh shit, we can actually do this. Let's hot jump this in. And it wasn't even a thought before the Rumble.
Yeah, because obviously what had happened is the Rumble happened, then The Rock got appointed to the board, I think on the Tuesday, and then the Vince McMahon stuff happened, like the lawsuit came out. So it was all kind of quite, it was a massive week, to be honest. And I was really gutted, because we our recording schedule just simply did not match up to it. So I was like, we can't cover any of it. No. So it'd be so out of date by the time we put it out. But yeah, it was a bit of a mad week, that one.
The best thing would have been for Punk to win the Rumble then. I mean, obviously they can't have foreshadowed his injury, but then he could have hit Roman, got injured, and then said, I've got a substitute.
And I actually think the injury helps him even more with that, because if, for example, Punk wins the Rumble and then comes out the next day and says, I'm injured, they could go, well, all right, then the Elimination Chamber, the winner of that can pick either winner, either champion as well. So at that point, you can then get whoever is that wins that, maybe Drew wins that and prevents Cody from getting a choice. And at that point, Roman can face who he wants, and it's The Rock, you know. So again, the key for me here, the key problem, even if at this point they were like, yes, we're going with Rock versus Roman, the key problem is that Cody won the Rumble and had the choice, and there's no logical sense in whatever explanation they could come up with. To your point, Matt, this is where I really do believe there is no logical way they could have justified Cody choosing Seth over Roman, no matter what. But I don't think that works either. I just don't think it works.
It makes him look like a fucking idiot. For the greater good or for whatever reason, it makes him look like an absolute fool.
The only thing that I, at the time and throughout this, I've been trying to kind of, I don't know, anticipate a story or explanation for what could have happened at the time, I put out a few tweets. And my tweet about explaining this was that on Raw after this SmackDown, Rollins was going to come out and assume that Cody had picked him after what Cody had said on SmackDown, and then he'd start talking about the glorious match that they'll have at WrestleMania. And then Rhodes would come out and apologize to Rollins and say that he made the wrong assumption. And he clarifies that he said he wasn't going to face Roman at WrestleMania, and that's because he's spoken to Adam Pearce and he's taking a shot at Elimination Chamber instead. And that way was the only way in my mind that they could justify, or they could, the logic would make sense for Cody to not face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, given that he had the choice to do so. So yeah, I was trying to come up with some way around this so that they could still have Rock versus Roman at WrestleMania, but make Cody still get his chance at Roman Reigns for the title. But there we go. So the following week, Raw happened, and I can't really remember anything that happened on that Raw, but there had been on social media a big kind of movement of people saying, we want Cody, yep, we don't want The Rock, all this stuff.
Fickle.
Well, I don't think they are. In fact, I think it's the opposite of fickle. I think if they've been saying we want The Rock, that would have been more fickle, because they've been on this journey with Cody for a good year. Now, I know people have wanted Rock versus Roman in the past, but at this particular point, I think people were like, no, we don't want that anymore. And there's something more important to us, and has been more important to us for the last year. This all led into the press conference that was held. And I don't know if they'd announced that this was going to happen, certainly before the SmackDown where Rock and Roman looked like it was on. Yeah. Certainly I didn't know anything about it. So it felt like it was quite hastily set up, this press conference to address all the kind of stuff. And on the press conference, Seth and Roman and Rock were having their kind of verbal confrontation. The Rock shared his big old family tree of the Anoa'i and other parts of the family as well, the Maivia family. And I think it even included Jimmy Snuka and others on there as well that aren't directly necessarily related to either The Rock or Roman Reigns. And then Cody Rhodes came out without any music, which was kind of quite
weird.
Quite weird in today, because we always expect music when someone comes out. And I liked it, because I'm like, I'm actually an advocate for removing music when people come out as a surprise. That make any sense to me?
It adds a bit more spontaneity,
which makes more sense, doesn't it? It makes more sense. Like if Cody's coming out to save someone, but someone's got his music queued up, it just doesn't, yeah, it's stupid.
So you get there, you're fucking a gorilla, and you're like, fuck, my mate's getting the shit kicked out of him. Have you got fucking Spotify open? Get your iPod out, hang on.
Exactly.
It's like the Jeff Hardy at AEW. Have you seen that? Matt Hardy's fucking like, ridiculous.
He comes out and he talks, and he kind of instantly says this is bullshit, and then basically says that, you know, he basically says he wants to face Roman at WrestleMania, which is the complete opposite of what he'd said on SmackDown.
Yeah.
And then Rock gives him a slap. There's a little bit of a pull apart.
God, Cody basically says to Roman, like, if your grandfather could look down on you, he'd be ashamed.
Yeah.
And then Rock comes in, steps in and slaps him, which is a massive overreaction. Let's be honest. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous, because ultimately you've just said about how you want to fight this person, and then you're like, no, I'm going to defend him now. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
So The Rock slaps Cody because of what he said about Roman's ancestors, which wasn't really insulting them, it was insulting Roman. And then there's sort of a bit of a pull apart. Seth Rollins sort of suddenly squares up as well alongside Cody. Triple H grabs Cody and pulls him aside and takes him out. The press conference is kind of over. There's a bit afterwards where The Rock and Roman Reigns pass Triple H in the corridor, and Rock tells Triple H to sort it all out. He swears, I think, at some point during that bit. And then you get the panel on the who are there for the press conference, which includes CM Punk, who they don't announce anything. They don't know what to make of what happened. They don't really know what bits to pull out or to put a spotlight on. They seem completely unbriefed about what they're supposed to take away from this whole thing. Like, it's not even confirmed that we're definitely therefore getting Cody versus Roman. So it's all a bit strange. Tom, you were already jumping in there, so give us your thoughts.
Well, yeah, it just seems a bit confused and didn't really make any sense. You know, it's just a bit daft. I don't know why it seemed like a real knee-jerk reaction. That's what the whole thing seemed like. It was like, oh shit, we fucked up here a little bit. We need to do something to try and correct course, but without really putting any thought into it. Like I said, the Rock kind of slapping him slapping Cody after he'd not attacked his family seemed like a massive overreaction. And it just logically just doesn't make any sense for the story. I didn't think it was very good. There's an element of, I quite like a little bit of, like, like a bit of confusion every now and again, because everything's so slick and so well produced in WWE. Like, it's nice every now and again to have a bit of like a, well, we don't really know what the fuck's going on sort of thing. But it didn't seem like that. It seemed like that in the worst possible way that it could be.
It was confusing. I mean, 100%. I can't say that it wasn't, because it definitely was. I like the idea of Brock sort of sticking up for Roman, sticking up for his family. I kind of get where you're coming from, Tom, but like, when you say they're going to be silly because he wanted to fight him, but you know, they're sportsmen and you know the honor, they were going to fight for honor, that type of thing. So I can kind of see him going, well, hang on, you fucking talk about my family. Yeah, I can kind of see that. So I'm okay with that. I didn't like with Seth Rollins bit involved, if I'm honest. It just, for me, he just felt like the complete odd man out. You know, him and his goofy friggin' attire and just his overall gimmick, just for me, just no, just push him as far away from that as humanly possible. It did seem to be a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to how people seem to respond to, you know, the announcement of them going with Rock versus Roman. But yeah, it definitely had holes.
I didn't watch the press conference because I checked out basically when Buddy Rock did the main event, but I've seen the highlights of it. Obviously, I've read about it online and I watched the highlights of it, and I completely agree. Knee-jerk reaction. We want Cody, so let's put Cody back in the mix. I will say the end. I absolutely loved the end of the press conference because it just seems so messy. And again, as you've said about everything is so overproduced with WWE. And I like the bit with the panel where they just didn't have a clue what was going on. It just seemed like really real. And I like the bit with Seth Rollins coming out, because at the time I got the impression that it was one of them where Cody was like, I'm going out, and Seth Rollins went, right, I'll come with you. You know, you can't be on your own, Rock and Roman, I'll come with you type thing. I think Solo Sikoa was there as well, wasn't he?
Heyman was there.
Oh, right, okay. Right. Yeah. I know, I do get them two mixed up.
They look similar.
Solo Sikoa.
Same sort of age.
It's the thumb. Yeah, but I must admit, I loved it, just how messy it was and how unproduced it seemed. It just seems completely different to what they normally do. So I did love it, and I was back on board then. Even though if you think about it, it's a bit of a shit reason. I've given my title shot away. I've messed up. Right, do you know what? No, forget that. I want my title shot back. It seems shit, but I was back on, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I did love the whole feel of it. I really did. I watched it live, actually, which is, again, weird. Another consequence, again, of just having a child that had woken up and I'd put back to sleep and then couldn't get back to sleep myself. So I was like, right, let's watch it. I thought it was really great. I've loved the kind of just the chaos and the fact that it was really like it felt chaotic and it felt like they were flying by the seat of their pants a lot. But certainly on reflection, I was like, well, it doesn't make any sense though, does it? Like there is no storyline sense. There's no internal logic here that makes any sense that this has happened. What the hell is Cody playing at? Presumably they're just not going to address why he said what he said on SmackDown. And to be honest, I can't blame them, because obviously they made a mistake there, and I don't think there is a way to recover from it. But also I think, you know, a lot of people, I think Tom, you said they just didn't seem to put any thought into it. I think the problem, and I think the problem has been all the way through, that there are too many people putting too much thought into it. So I think that, you know, if you imagine there's kind of like, especially if what you said earlier on about they didn't know The Rock was going to be available until the whole him joining the TKO board was finally kind of approved and set up. If that was the case, then they were still in the kind of process of negotiating exactly how this would all play out at that time. So, yeah. And I think, as I said on the WrestleMania 39 episode, if this had been under the previous regime of Vince McMahon, thank God it's not, but if it had been, Vince would have wanted to be certain about what they were doing before The Rock even signed the contract. Because, and so would The Rock, because they'd want to be absolutely clear, because they'd want the build to be as clean as possible. And I think that's what the issue was here, is they were going into this, and perhaps The Rock was thinking, I want to do this. Triple H was like, well, I'm not sure because I want to do this. I'm trying to protect these people. The Rock's trying to protect himself. Brian Gewirtz is probably involved from The Rock's perspective, writing his stuff. It not always matching up to the way Triple H and his writers want this to go. And maybe they couldn't agree. So, and I feel like that's been a big theme running throughout the rest of it, is that we didn't get content that made 100% sense because there's a lot of people negotiating from both sides trying to protect individuals. And it just, you know, that nobody, because nobody's fully in charge of it, everybody's getting a piece of the pie, which is always a tricky situation in wrestling.
I guess the thing with having Vince McMahon not involved anymore, there's no one to shit on the ideas.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And I think it's also just a case of this, you know, this would be the same. I think if Vince McMahon was still in control now, it would still be the same because this is coming from a higher power than I'm going to go back to that terrible storyline, but it's coming from a higher authority than the controller of WWE's creative. It's coming from the board themselves, and they are kind of almost directing that The Rock is a part of this. So I think that's the problem. Before we carry on, there was one other thing you said, Matt, about Rollins and him looking like a spare part. I thought everybody in this segment, everybody in this press conference, with the exception of The Rock, but even The Rock, because he seemed really stupid because he got offended by nothing, but everybody came across less than what they are or what they were going into it. Seth Rollins looked like a spare part. Cody Rhodes looked like a bitch because he got slapped and didn't do anything about it. Roman just stood there looking gormless. And The Rock, as I said, was stupid because he got offended by something that wasn't even an offensive thing towards the Maivia Anoa'i family. So I was a bit like, nobody's come out of this looking good. And that was a real problem for me. I mean, you want at least someone to come out of it looking good, and no one did for me.
Wrestlers are sensitive. They're a sensitive bunch. You mentioned their family, you're going to get slapped.
So the next thing that took place was The Rock and Roman Reigns on SmackDown. And this was the first time that they'd kind of been on SmackDown together. They came out separately. Roman said some things, but not very much. Then The Rock cut a promo where he kind of insulted the crowd somewhat and kind of tried to do some heel stuff, although it was received, kind of had a mixed reaction because a lot of people still want to cheer for The Rock. And at the end of it, the first hint that there was something between Roman Reigns and The Rock kind of was brought up when Roman said that The Rock had to do just one thing for him, which was acknowledge him, and The Rock did indeed acknowledge him. Matt, what was your thoughts on this segment?
This was first class. This, for me, pardon the pun, is where it really started cooking. The entire segment, the main thing that I took from this and the main thing that I will remember for an incredibly long time is The Rock about to do the, you know, catchphrase, if you smell it, The Rock is cooking, Roman putting his hand on him to stop him mid-catchphrase. For me, and I know, again, this is not going to be popular, but for me, that was on par with the whole Roman, Sami Zayn, Jimmy Uso thing from about a year or so ago, where they went, oh, you know, the tribal chief said, whoa! And then everyone went, oh, my God, I don't give a damn what the tribal chief said. That's what he said. And the crowd went, oh. For me, it's equally on par as that, because that was excellent. You know, the fact that Roman was the guy to stop him mid-catchphrase, how dare you? But The Rock being part of the bloodline, I mean, coming out in in that damn shirt, those shirts are so good. He just looks amazing like that as it is. I think this is perhaps where they started to tweak his entrance a little bit. That's epic. Again, he just looks like a star. Joining the bloodline, which I just thought was a natural progression, which was great. It was sort of callbacks to, you know, the days of the Nation of Domination. That looked so cool. And him acknowledging, I just thought was so good. And I really do think in the long run, we will get a payoff of that eventually. But that potentially planted the seeds for way down the line between the pair of them. But him acknowledging him, I just thought, is genius. And I just thought this was a home run segment.
Yeah, to be fair, this was good. Was this the one where he, right, this is going to be the worst explanation of this ever, but near the end, he says something like, he points at Roman. Is it?
Yes.
He points at him, doesn't he? And then everyone was going, oh my God, that's, you know, yeah. What I mean?
He says something like, you know, you're not going to win the main event of WrestleMania. I'm going to stop you winning the main event of WrestleMania. And it looks like he might be pointing a Roman, basically.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So yeah, this was really good. And then with that, and I didn't see that. Well, I saw it at the time, but I didn't think anything of it. And it's only when fans went online and said, oh, we've noticed this. And I bought into it. I was like, right, I get that. And it's a nice subtle thing that Triple H does, like the little subtle things, and I bought into it. So I thought, yeah, fair enough, this is going to be good. At the time, it did kind of, in my head, I was predicting what was going to happen, but sometimes that's not necessarily a bad thing. But yeah, this was good.
I thought overall it was a pretty decent segment. I really liked the bit when you said, Matt, like the moment where Roman interrupts the Rock and says, you have to acknowledge me. But I thought, like at the beginning of it, like I thought the Roman came out, didn't say anything. He basically said he wouldn't say anything until the crowd acknowledged him. And then he kind of basically sat through the Rock waffling away with a bit of a face like a smacked ass. I really like the fact that he did acknowledge him. I hated the fact that it ended with the Rock's music as well, which I thought throughout the entire segment, I think it just, again, put Roman Reigns on the back foot because he just stood there for about 20 minutes whilst the Rock waffled on about stuff. And to your point earlier, Rockstar, like Roman Reigns is the champion. He's the person who's having the big match at WrestleMania. Like, why is he not saying anything at all? Which again adds further credibility to your argument that it's actually a Rock Cody feud and Roman's just a side piece to that effect. And that was probably my major takeaway from it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that came out of the press conference as well, as a lot of people sort of said, oh, when the Rock's around, Roman Reigns is Solo Sikoa, basically. And that was the thing I took away. I also loved the bit where he stopped in mid catchphrase. I thought that was great. But I just felt like the follow up to it and what came before it was not satisfying at all. So the build up, what came before the Rock's promo, I was like, this is just a little bit nothing for me. They're not saying anything. He's not saying anything. And actually, this has been a major problem. We talked about right at the start of this podcast how long the entrances are.
Yeah.
The entrances have been the biggest issue for me the whole way through. If you watch a SmackDown segment at the moment, and it's 21 minutes long, 12 minutes of that are people entering the ring. There's only 11 minutes of them talking, and it's just like, come on, guys, like give us some more content. You're not actually giving us any content. And I can skip through nearly the whole video and just watch very small amounts of it. And I get the whole, everything they've said. It's really bizarre and not a style that I enjoy. Not to say that I don't think The Rock's entrance isn't really cool, but just, Roman Reigns' entrance already lasts forever. You know, add The Rock to that as well. And it's just a bit much. And I just felt like that was one thing. First of all, there was shitloads of entrants, but then also what The Rock said, just there was no substance to any of it. It didn't do anything. It didn't tell any kind of story, and it didn't make me interested at all for WrestleMania. The only bit that made me interested for WrestleMania was the bit when he then interrupted the, you know, if you smell what The Rock's cooking, and asked him to acknowledge him. That was great. But like you, Tom, I was like, at that point, the Bloodlines music's got to come on, and the follow up next week has got to be The Rock coming out with Roman Reigns. It's got to be. That's the only thing that makes sense, because then you really are starting to think, oh, is The Rock happy with this, playing second fiddle to Roman Reigns? Is he just accepting that he's now part of the Bloodline? But instead, they have him coming back out with The Rock with his own music and his own entrance. And I was just like, I get that it makes sense in terms of the live crowd, I'm sure, want to see The Rock's entrance. But in terms of the story, it makes no sense at all. He's got to come out with them. So I kind of forgot the whole interrupting of the catchphrase thing until we just spoke about it, to be honest, because it didn't have the follow up that it needed, which was, as I say, Rock coming out with Roman the next week.
So, you know, for me, I can see them in the long run, you know, like Roman Reigns saying that. Who are you, you know, pretending to be the biggest star? You know, I was the damn champion. Was or still am, who knows? You know, I'm the damn champion. It's like, why didn't, you know, come out as part of the Bloodline? I can see them perhaps saying that. So maybe that's somewhere they're going.
I agree, but that's why I think they should not have done, for me, the interruption of the catchphrase at that moment if they wanted them to keep coming out separately. That, for me, that was the moment that you use when there feels like there might be tension because Roman's not happy about The Rock having his own entrance, and him then getting that acknowledgement and then them coming out, even if it's just once at WrestleMania, let's say, with all together, like in what as one. I accept that that's probably unrealistic given who The Rock is, and again, probably another compromise that's being made as part of the fact that Rock's got his own writer, effectively, and has got a certain amount of authority that is even above Triple H's, which is like, I'm not going to do something if I don't want to do it. And he probably wanted to make sure he always got his own entrance. I'm not saying he's being arrogant or egotistical. He's just, but he is somebody who's going to protect his own interests. That's always going to be what he does. So yeah, for me, that's why it's happened, is that he's basically, I think that there's just this constant discord between WWE's main creative team and The Rock's writer and The Rock himself saying, I'm not really comfortable doing that. And I just felt they should have come out together after that point. There was some stuff on Raw, but I'm not going to go into that because it's not as interesting. The next sort of main thing was the Rock and Reigns and Cody and Rollins being in the ring together the following week on SmackDown. Again, if you wanted lots and lots of entrances, boy, did you get it here. Because obviously, first of all, the Bloodline come out and they do their usual 5 minute fucking entrance. Then The Rock comes out and he takes another 4 or 5 minutes to do his. Then Cody and Seth came out and they gave them maybe two minutes. And they were rushing by the end of the promo. Like, you could tell by the end of it, they were rushing to get everything in. And this one ended with Cody slapping The Rock back after The Rock said something about Dusty. And the base of the show ending as soon as he slapped him, that was like maybe 3 seconds of The Rock kind of reacting, and then the TV went dark. Alex, how did we feel about this one?
Yeah, it was okay, but we're building a Rock. We started building a Rock-Cody match. I think with WrestleMania, and I get having a part-time champion, not a part-time champion, I suppose it is a part-time champion. I've no issue with it. I've no issue with it because it makes the title seem really important. However, I've got an issue with it when on your biggest show of the year, they're not around. And for me, if Roman Reigns is going to sort his contract out or whatever and say, I'm going to be on this, if it was my company, I'd be saying, Matt, but I need you for 6 weeks leading up to WrestleMania, like every night, Monday to Friday, every night. Again, he's not really been involved in the feud so far. So this was kind of the start of the lack of Roman involvement for me. With regards to the actual segment, yeah, it was decent. I suppose Cody Rhodes has got to get a little bit of payback by slapping The Rock, but it was a bit throwaway, really, not for me.
I definitely think this was one of the weaker ones. It was okay. I wouldn't even say it was bad. You know, it was good to see Cody get, you know, that sort of receipt back. So I thought that was a good move. I mean, the main thing about this, and dear God, it's not an easy thing to do with The Rock in the ring, but I think the Seth Rollins probably was, you know, this was probably the best that he looked in terms of the entire way that he's been presented in this so far. So props to him. I thought this was as close to serious and, you know, I'm actually taking him seriously that he's ever looked. So I thought that was pretty good as well. Yeah, I mean, just on a quick aside to the entrances, I mean, it does make me laugh. I mean, but I personally, any entrance after watching years of The Undertaker take forever and a fucking day to walk down to the ring is a breeze. So any entrance after that, great.
Just another thing with regards to the entrances, I was going to say earlier, with regards to Roman Reigns, I love Roman Reigns' entrance. I love that it's kind of long and he's slow, methodical, he's walking to the ring, but not every week and not on TV. It should be on pay-per-views. On pay-per-views from big matches, do it then. Build the match up. The best example is Mania last year. Like, the entrances for me just built the match up massively. And but on Raw, when he's coming down for a segment, no, just come to the ring. Just come to the ring.
Well, there's an easy way to solve it as well, which is just have a break in the middle of it. They have advert breaks all the time. You can see them on YouTube because they have to, obviously, it just cuts to the next thing. Just do a break for fuck's sake in the middle of it. You can still give the live crowd Roman Reigns' long entrance, but we don't have to see it all, and you don't have to waste so much television time on a man walking. Like, it's just really not very interesting to me.
Those CGI graphics have just got to go as well. They're so bad.
Yeah, they're not the best. My thoughts on this one was that it felt like a wasted opportunity. You've got The Rock for limited amounts of dates. We knew he was going to be on 3 SmackDowns in a row, and we also knew that he was supposed to be on the Raw that we haven't yet seen, the one just before WrestleMania, but we didn't. That was it, as far as we understood at the time. So you've got him for 4 nights before WrestleMania, and this felt like a waste to me. Like, he barely spoke. I think he spoke for like 2 minutes, maybe at most. Each of them tried to speak a little bit, but they didn't have any time because their entrances took so fucking long. And as I said, they were definitely rushing by the end, and the end felt really weird. Like, how do you end the show with all four of them still in the ring and presumably massively heated with each other because Cody has just slapped The Rock? Surely the only way to get out of that without everybody fighting each other is for, surely, instantly, because you've got the security at ringside as well. That's what I don't get. Adam Pearce and some security were there watching them, so they immediately should have jumped in the ring to prevent them getting to one another, and then the show should have gone off the air. But instead, you just left with all four of them in the ring, and you're like, well, how did that resolve itself? Did they just all walk away the minute the cameras went off? Like, it just felt so unnatural and so unorganic, and that was my big issue with it, was the end. So this was not for me. This was not a good segment, in my opinion, but mainly because of the way they ended it and because they were quite literally, you know, rushing at the end.
I'm misremembering this segment. Was Roman Reigns there?
Yeah.
All right. I thought he was just Cody and The Rock. Forget that speech that I went on about Roman Reigns not being there then.
No, but I mean, no, he was there, but all four of them were there, but it just was...
Illustrates the point though, doesn't it? That he's relegated.
Exactly.
I remember Cody Rhodes slapping The Rock, but I'm misremembering it. Oh, completely wrong. I thought it was just them two.
We've got a few more steps of this build to go, but I propose that we take a little break right now and come back to this immediately afterwards, because I mean these are the big matches, right? So it's not like we're over laboring the point. This is what WrestleMania is really hinging on, although there's other stuff, and we'll try and get to as much as we can, but that's why we started with it, because I didn't want us to sort of cut short our own talking about this. So yeah, we'll just take a quick break and we'll be back in just a moment.
Yeah, Cody finally manned up, huh? Finally grew a pair of balls. He took a swing at The Rock. He slapped the hell out of The Rock. But what'd The Rock do? The Rock smiled. And then a couple of days later, Cody went on Monday Night Raw. And The Rock was waiting. The world was waiting. How were you going to respond to the biggest moment of your career, slapping The Rock? Were you going to cut an impassionate promo? What were you going to do? How were you going to respond, Cody Rhodes, to the moment that made you famous? You responded by crying. You responded by crying. You gotta be me. That's how you respond. I can't give the title to my daddy, so I'm gonna give the title to my mommy. I can't give the title to my... You ain't giving anybody anything. Cody, The Rock doesn't want to talk to you right now, but The Rock wants to talk to one person right now. And that's your mama. Mama Rhodes. The Rock knows that you're watching. The Rock knows you're listening. You don't know The Rock, but you're gonna know The Rock in ways that you wish you hadn't. So Mama Rhodes, let The Rock break it down for you and how WrestleMania is gonna go. Your son Cody took something from me, and I'm gonna make him pay. I'm gonna make your family pay, and I'm gonna make you pay. On WrestleMania Night 1, The Rock and Roman Reigns, we're going to beat your son and we're going to beat Seth Rollins, which puts us to Night 2. Bloodline rules, anything goes. Ah, Mama Rhodes, The Rock knows that you just can't wait for your son to finish that story. You want your son to finish that story so bad, and you want your son to hand you that belt so bad, that Universal Championship, but that ain't going to happen. That belt is going to stay around the waist of my cousin Roman Reigns. And now, Mama Rhodes, you are going to get a belt, but you're going to get The Rock's belt. It ain't going to be that Universal Championship. It's going to be this belt here, Mama Reigns. Mama Rhodes is going to be a belt just like this. And The Rock is going to take this belt, and he's going to beat your son. He's going to beat the piss out of your son, and The Rock is going to make your son bleed. He's going to tear his skin, tear his flesh, and he's going to whoop him. He's going to whoop him like a dog over and over and over again. And Mama Rhodes, your son's blood is going to be on this belt. And when that Rock is done whooping your son, and Roman is done beating your son 1, 2, 3, The Rock is going to take this belt full of your son's blood, and he's going to walk over to you. Mama Rhodes, The Rock needs you sitting in the first row so the world can see. And The Rock is going to walk right over to you, Mama Rhodes, and he's going to hand you this belt. He's going to hand you this belt right here. And he's going to put it in your lap, and you're going to be crying just like your son, and that's okay. Because then The Rock is going to whisper in your ear, Mama Rhodes, and with all the blood on your son's belt here and your tears on that belt, The Rock is going to whisper in your ear. He's going to wipe your tears away, and he's going to say, Michelle, what can I say except you're welcome? If you smell what the final boss is cooking,
Okay then, welcome back. So we continue the talk about the rock build, I guess, is really the thing I want to say, but the Rock Reigns, Cody, Seth thing that's going on. And the next thing we got to cover is the Rock concert and then the 5-minute promo that he did after the Rock concert. So he did a sort of rehash of his 2003 Rock concert on SmackDown, where he sat in the middle of the ring and sang some songs. And then afterwards, he got a promo on Cody where he talked about how he was going to make Cody bleed and put the blood all over his weightlifting belt and then hand the belt to Cody's mother.
Mama Rhodes.
Mama Rhodes, indeed. Let's go with Alex first on this one.
Right. This is one of the worst segments in WWE history.
Right. Worse than the Gobbledygooker. Worse than the Shockmaster.
And I'll tell you what this is worse than. The worst segment in WWE WWE history, or one of the worst segments, is the Damian Sandow segment with Curtis Axel when Damian Sandow changes his gimmick. He comes out and he says that, you know, he's a babyface. He comes out. Curtis Axel comes out. Curtis Axel starts talking and Damian Sandow starts going, and repeating him like a child, right? It's fucking atrocious. It's embarrassing. It's cringing. It is awful, right?
I'm surprised anyone had ever saw that, because I don't remember it. And why would anyone carry on watching? They see Damian Sandow and Curtis Axel. Well, like, how did they not immediately check out?
At least this had viewers.
It was bad exactly. Time. Now this, for me, right, this is on a par, if not worse, because The Rock is better than this. It was embarrassing. It was his old shtick that at the time was really funny. The Rock concerts that he's done in the past have been brilliant. First of all, is he a heel or a babyface? So he's getting the crowd on side. Is he a heel or a babyface? Which one at this time, which is he? He's a heel, isn't he? He's supposed to be a heel. But he's getting the crowd on side and getting them to sing along and chant along with him against the biggest babyface in the company at the minute. So that, I had a massive issue with that. And secondly, the content of the actual concert was horrible. Embarrassing, cringy, wasn't funny. It was like a car crash watching it, an absolute car crash. I absolutely hated it. We watched it and I put it in the group about what the fuck is this? And I said that The Rock's inclusion in this storyline is completely ruining it for me at the minute. Completely ruining it for me. And I know what you're going to say, Matt. I know exactly what you're going to say. And I'm not going to agree with anything that you say. There's no way that anybody, and bear in mind, I'm a Rock fan. I like The Rock. I love The Rock from the Attitude Era. Thought he was brilliant. One of my favourites. Okay. One of my favourites in the Attitude Era. Love him. Right. Think he's piss funny. Probably the best talker in the history of the business. But this, there's nobody that can have thought that this was good. Nobody. And you'll say that you did and you're wrong. You're trolling me. You are wrong. There is nobody that thought that this was good. There cannot have been anybody. I will not have it.
So let me ask the question, Alex. Tom, did you think this was good?
No. Well, no, I thought the last 5 minutes was good. But I hated the fact that he comes down as babyface as fuck in Memphis, which until I watched Young Rock, I had no idea that he had any kind of affinity with Memphis. And I'm someone who's watched quite a lot of The Rock's career in his prime in WWF. Never mentioned Memphis, ever.
He has.
So, not much, though. Not much. He's reps Florida. Do you know what I mean? He reps Miami more so than anywhere else. I don't agree. But anyway. Either way, yes, towards the point, like, he should have gone even harder on Memphis. Do you know what I mean? If he really was the biggest heel in the business, as he's claimed to be on Twitter. And I just think that he just shouldn't have done that. Now, I thought the last 5 minutes were fucking brilliant. The Mama Rhodes, the blood, the serious, I'm going to kill Cody Rhodes. That was really good. And it was just, damage had already been done by that point. The Rock couldn't make that segment better by going serious after going jokey and crap for 20 minutes prior to it.
So let's have it, Polar Bear.
The appeal, part of the appeal for The Rock for me is just, he's a man-child. That's part of what I find quite entertaining about him, is that he's a grown-ass man, and he's been calling people Rudy Poos, you know, poo-poo, and stupid, silly shit like that for years. And that's part of what I find so funny, is that he's so serious in how he delivers lines that are just absurdly stupid. That's part of what I find so endearing and funny about him, is that he can be so serious while calling somebody a Rudy Poo and just stuff like that. So just, it was silly nonsense. But the fact that he does it so and takes it so seriously is just brilliant. It wasn't the best of the rock concerts that he's done. I'll certainly take that point. But I still enjoyed it. It was, for me, it was still funny. For me, it was on par of Kurt Angle singing Sexy Kurt all those years ago. That type of silly nonsense is just, it was, I thought it was funny and liked it. And the fact that he could then flip the switch and go to ultimate fucking psychopath by the end of it, where just like a cold as ice killer, you know, doing the what can I say except you're welcome, you know, my God, was that amazing. And the fact that, you know, the contrast in styles makes it all the better, probably killed so many children's, you know, conceptions of what Moana is, and have probably ruined it for them. Great. It was just a home run.
But I find that the jokey stuff and the final boss stuff are two completely conflicting ideologies that just don't work together. That, I don't know, I just didn't think it worked. I need to let Alex talk, because I saw his reaction when you said that it was like Kurt Angle singing Sexy Kurt. I saw Rockstar put his hands over his face, so I'm desperate to hear what he's got to say about that.
But it's nothing like that, because that was funny. Because that was really funny, because
to sing to you.
Because it was something that, it was obviously a feud with Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle, and it's something that Kurt Angle was a killer, but had this comedic side to him. All right, same as the Rock, fair enough. But it was just something that it looked foolish, and it was funny. It was really funny. It really, really funny. That really funny, because it's not something that Kurt Angle would do.
Let me say why I think it's different. Because Kurt Angle looked like the Fool. The Rock didn't look like the Fool in the Rock concert. In fact, he made out and basically undercut the Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins and two babyfaces throughout. It just wasn't funny. It wasn't funny, but he didn't make himself look the Fool. He didn't show ass as he should do as a heel. He was basically doing something that was appealing to people like you, Matt, who wanted that nostalgia hit, and they got it from him. I'm not looking for the nostalgia hit from The Rock. We've seen that before. We've seen it dozens of times before. I just want something great from The Rock. And this is the weird thing about this segment, is that the whole Rock concert thing was the closest I've been to giving up. I was like, this is shit. I've no interest in this. This is rubbish. He's not telling a story. He's just using the same old childish insults that he used 25 years ago. And that was 25 years ago when South Park was really, really popular. And understandably, it was a big deal then. But we're now a quarter of a century later. It's time to move on and do something else. Do something more contemporary. But then I got really hopeful again, because they did something phenomenal. That last 5 minutes I thought was some of the best work of The Rock's entire career. I just thought it was so phenomenal. It's just such a shame that it came at the end of the Rock concert and it just didn't land with the crowd, because they were kind of in the kind of jokey, jovial moment, and The Rock just couldn't quite turn it around. But that, if that had been all he did, was come out and do the psychotic Rock, I'd have been like, this is, I'm so glad The Rock came back. That's how I would have felt about it, because it was superb. That, you're absolutely right, Matt. The bit where he does the you're welcome and incorporates that into the promo, I was like, this is fucking mad. This is like an insane guy coming in and just absolutely being psychotic. And I felt like there's a really good story to tell there, like of The Rock coming back, thinking everyone's going to love him, but then they shit all over his idea for a main event with Roman Reigns. And because he can, and because he's this guy who's on the board and everything, he's just going to basically turn psychotic and just do what the hell he wants. And I thought that was great, but I was just so let down by the concert before. So I was left at the end of it kind of feeling so conflicted, because I was like, this is amazing, this stuff he's capable of doing. Why isn't he doing that more often? And I think, again, the reason is because he is in conflict, not in, you know, really aggressive way, but he's in conflict with the things WWE want him to do. And as a consequence, they're kind of, there's too many cooks and they're all trying to kind of compromise. And add a little bit here and remove a little bit there. And in the main, what that's resulted in is these promos and these segments where there've been absolutely no content whatsoever, like mainly entrances. But even when there's not entrances, is The Rock insulting the crowd or making a silly joke. No interesting, like, new things, no kind of nothing explored in terms of the characters or the story. Is just fluff. And I think that's happened because they've got this real problem of too many people trying to add something and too many people saying, well, I don't want that to happen and I don't want that to happen. So they're vetoing things. And in the end, it just becomes really generic. And yet this slither of something existed at the end of it. And I was like, that gives me hope that there's still something really interesting to explore in this feud.
This segment would have been a complete home run if they advertised it on Facebook or whatever, or social media or whatever, The Rock concert on Friday night SmackDown. And then the opening thing, we're going to have The Rock concert. And then all the way through the show, The Rock concert tonight. And then he comes out with his guitar, Rock concert, strums one chord and says, you assholes don't deserve it. Smashes up guitar, doesn't do the Rock concert, and then chits on the crowd for a couple of minutes and then goes into that promo. That would have been dynamite. Absolutely. For a heel, it would have been absolutely dynamite. The crowd would have shit all over him, completely booed him out of the building, promising this Rock concert. And then they would have booed. It'd have been nuclear. For me, it'd have been nuclear. And then the end promo, yeah, I get it. It was brilliant. But you can't, when you think of that segment, I just think about the first part. It was fucking awful.
It's just one very small thing I do have to just point out. And it's just fucking hilarious that you happen to use that as an example, Ben. South Park being popular. Because I bought, being the man child that I am, bought a video game the other day, and it's a South Park video game. Oh, so as soon as you mentioned that, I just thought, yep, still popular.
Matt wishes he was still at the turn of the century, basically. That's where that's his happy place. That's where he wants to be. It's where all his favorite music came out. It's where all his favorite video games came out. It's where the wrestling was as good as it's been ever, and he just wishes he was still there, I think.
This nostalgia is incredibly powerful, I must admit.
So that was that segment. There was then, I believe... I'm not sure exactly certain of the order of all this. So there's a few bit. This is where it gets a little bit hazy. But there was one segment on Raw where Cody basically talked about The Rock not being a heel, instead being an asshole, which, whilst a quite effective line, was once again talking about the insider stuff, which I am just completely not interested in. I don't know if anybody else got anything to say about that.
Well, didn't he kind of criticize The Rock for using that kind of insider knowledge and then reference Brian Gewirtz? I'm just like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, also, a fraction of the audience know who Brian Gewirtz is.
Yeah.
Like, he's not even Vince Russo in terms of his, you know, how famous he is. Like, he's just, I know, we all know who Brian Gewirtz is, but he's not that famous. Like, it probably went over the head of most people. And I think at this point, the other thing that disappointed me about this is where I would imagine that The Rock and Brian Gewirtz have got no input into this at all, because it's just Cody Rhodes on his own on Raw. So why would they? It would just be the WWE creative team writing this. And so I'm like, this is where I'm really worried, because all the other stuff I can understand if there's a problem because they're trying to, like, placate everyone and not managing to come up with anything interesting. But this is just Cody talking in the middle of the ring. Like, this should be solid, this stuff.
He's got a history of that. He did that. He used to do that in AEW as well, didn't he? Referencing heels and faces and stuff like that. And I think when he was a face and they were booing him, and he said, oh, people want me to turn heel. You're like, what? What are you doing?
Yeah. You can kind of get away with that a little bit more in AEW than you can in WWE as well. I still think it's shit either way. Yeah, but you can probably get away with it a little bit more in AEW.
Yeah, the fan base are more primed for it. They expect it a little bit. And also, they're probably more up on the backstage machinations and, you know, various historical things that have taken place, that it would make more sense in AEW, definitely. So then we got the SmackDown where Roddy Rhodes.
Yeah, Roddy Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns had a promo in the ring. Now, as I said, I'm not sure if that was before or after the Cody promo against The Rock, but doesn't really matter. And on this particular occasion, they both promised to leave their sort of friends out of the way. They weren't going to be there. It was just going to be the two of them. They had an exchange where they kind of touched upon a little bit of the history of both of them. Reigns was talking about how Cody can't trust Seth because of everything that Seth had done as part of the Shield. And obviously Cody was kind of questioning whether Roman could trust The Rock. And then they kind of had Roman Reigns exit the ring, but be joined by Jimmy and Solo, at which point Cody revealed that Seth and Jay were also there to back him up. And they kind of just had this sort of stare down, basically, from a distance. Now, what I'll say about this one is that I didn't think this was an amazing promo, but it was at the time about the most realized thing I thought they'd done in this storyline, because it was much more the thing I was hoping for, which was I was hoping that they would really dig into and mine the rich amount of content there is in their histories and their shared histories. Like Seth and Roman in particular have such a crossover in terms of their careers, and obviously starting with the Shield and Seth turning on them, and the fact that Seth is a babyface here and Roman's is a heel. I love that kind of slight paradox in that actually Roman's got a very good reason for not liking Seth, and it's based in all of their shared history, and the fact that Roman could almost be legitimately thinking that Cody's going to get turned on by Seth because that's his own experience of how Seth treated him. And so I was like, all that stuff, I want them to mine that. I want them to go into that stuff, because that's where all the real rich vein of this story lies, is in their shared history. And so I was really happy they did that. And I also quite like the fact that Cody was backed up by Jay and by Seth. I still think, though, Sammy should be part of this if they're going to really want to do this well. Sammy should be part of this whole thing too. Like, and there are the numbers. Like, actually, numbers work. Like, there's The Rock, Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa, and Jimmy Uso, and there needs to be four on the other side, and Sammy's the fourth one, and he should be a part of this. So I really think that was disappointing that he's not been. But in general, this was not great, but it was a promo segment where I was like, I think we're getting close to doing the thing that I want us to do, which is to really, really start to explore the dynamics between all of these different characters, which we just haven't had. All of the promos, even when they've been in the ring together, have been just really surface level stuff and not really exploring who these people are, or what their motivations are. And for the first time, I felt like we got it a little bit in this promo. And I enjoyed it, although I accept it didn't hit super hard.
I think everything that you've said kind of makes me think of, like, this is how it's all been all along. It's not been particularly storyline or character driven. They're missing loads of bits, and it should be so much better than it is. And I don't think it's that difficult to make it better either.
No, I don't think so either.
Which is what makes it a little bit disappointing.
Is this the one that's just been on? It was on Friday Night SmackDown just.
The last SmackDown that we've seen, which would be.
Yeah,
22nd maybe of March.
Yeah, well, I liked it because it brought the champion in, and it was a segment that was heavily included the most important wrestling champion that has been for some time. So I liked it because it built the Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns match. That's why I liked it, and The Rock was nowhere to be seen.
Matt,
I hated it because The Rock wasn't in it. Now.
You have me then.
You know, I just saw the opportunity there. Hook, line,
yeah,
and
sinker. Fair enough.
In all fairness, and I'll give you your props to this. In all fairness, I did like this too, because it is ultimately the main, at least for now anyway, at least on the surface, the main destination does appear to be Cody and Roman. So that's fine. So I liked it, you know, bringing it back to what the overall point is between the pair of them. So I was cool with it. And I like the dynamic between the pair of them. Cody and Roman, it just, over the last year or so, it does feel like one of those all important feuds over the last couple of years. And it's the pair of them, I just think, mesh really well. But wasn't it like the best, you know, sort of, you know, promo between the pair of them? But it was good. The fact that, yeah, like you said, you know, all the other guys came out towards the end, I thought that was pretty cool. You know, they both got their sort of backup ready. I thought that was good. Yeah, this was good.
Something we've missed along the way that I've just remembered is along one of the promos that we haven't seen it is when The Rock kind of proposed the tag match and kind of added the stip to it that if the team of The Rock and Roman win, then they get to choose, it gets to be a Bloodline Rules match.
I think we did
talk about that segment, we just didn't mention
that bit.
One of the things that happened.
I hate the fact that The Rock has now gone on to say that he is all of their bosses. Therefore, it makes that entire aspect of the match completely stupid, because if he's the boss, as he claims to be, then surely he can impose that sanction anyway. So what's the point in having it in the match?
I also hated the way he explained it. I thought it was the most jumbled pile of nonsense I've ever heard. Like, I was like, this is the best talker supposedly in the history of the business, and he made an absolute pig's ear of it. I was like, what the fuck is the stipulation? And even now, even though I know what it is, I still don't really know what it is, because it's bonkers. It's like, oh well, you know, if we win, there's no interference. Like, well, of course not. Like, there's no interference in any match, you stupid dickheads. I've called out AEW for exactly the same thing, so I've got to call out WWE for it. That is bonkers nonsense. That should just not make air at all. And then the flip side is Bloodline rules, which effectively is what they do anyway, because they always interfere. So I'm just like, none of this makes any sense. It's just a stupid stipulation just to justify the match. And I was like, you don't really even need to justify the match, do you? You don't like each other, so just make the match. That's fine.
Yeah, daft.
Sorry to interrupt. We have missed a segment, and it was the Cody Rhodes sit down with Michael Cole. And I think that was after. Was that the Raw after the Rock concert?
Possibly. I don't remember. And I don't think I watched it, which is why I've missed it out.
Right, okay. Well, just dead quickly on that. Rock, that's how you do a promo leading to this match, because it was sensational.
Oh, is this the one where he cried?
Yeah, sit down interview with Michael Cole. absolutely.
So I do remember. I did see it. I did really like it. But I also thought that because of the way the Rock's positioned Cody throughout the whole thing, which is this, you know, leader of the Cody crybabies, I thought it made him look stupid. Like, I really did. I thought it made him look really weak. I think if nothing had been positioned the way it had prior to that, I'd have been like, this is sensational stuff. But because of it, I just thought it made him look, just a little bit like, oh, come on, mate.
It did not do him any favours.
Oh, I loved it.
And I think it would have been, I honestly think it would have been amazing, but it's just the way they've positioned Cody and his fans all the way through it. I was like, who wants to be part of the Crybabies gang? No one wants to be the part of the Crybabies gang. And now it feels like Cody is the lead crybaby. And I just think, as I say, if they hadn't positioned him that way, or their fans that way all the way through, it would have been wonderful. But it just didn't work at this point in this feud.
The only thing that I didn't like about it was that it was built into a Rock versus Cody singles match. That's what it felt like. And that's a common theme. And we've missed something else out as well. Diarrhea Dwayne. What?
Oh, fuck off.
In hell is that?
The thing is, Matt, I don't think you have any... I think with this one, Matt, is I don't think you've got a leg to stand on.
No.
Exactly on the same level as the Rock stuff. Like, it's shit. It's absolutely shit. But it's exactly what the Rock's been doing the entire way through. And I'm just a bit like, it's all shit.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
I'll admit to be the hypocrite, but fuck off.
So where are we at now? Raw this week?
So then Raw this week is where we are at.
There was a Raw before this with a Cody pro of mine, which the gist of it was like he called him a whiny bitch and he used a lot of language, and it was kind of like, if anybody saw his sort of quote hard times promo from AEW a couple of years ago, it was kind of that type of thing where he used similar sort of lines to what he used there. And it was all right, and it was good. I think a lot of people made a lot more big of a deal of it than it was, but it was still good.
Was this the Attitude Era's back promo?
Yeah. And I think it's like he said something about The Rock's mom as well, and people were like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. I put it on the group, and I think it was you said he called him a whiny bitch. I thought, oh, I'm not bothering with that then.
I didn't watch that one. So then we go with this week's Raw. As we are recording this, as I say, we have not seen the final episode of Raw and SmackDown, and we haven't seen the SmackDown that came after the Raw we're about to talk about. But it was where effectively Cody's in the ring, The Rock comes out as a surprise, looks like there's going to be some kind of physical confrontation. Instead, The Rock puts his arms behind his back and whispers something to Cody. I think I saw Brian Alvarez had sort of said that he'd read his lips and it said, tonight I'm going to make you bleed or something.
I so hope that's what he said, because it's fucking great if he did.
And then they, at the end of the show, there's a match that relies on Cody and Seth Rollins to come out and save Jey Uso from an attack by Jimmy and Solo. Seth goes after Solo. Jimmy runs away up the ramp and to the backstage area. Cody goes after him. But when they get backstage and they're continuing to fight, The Rock suddenly appears out of nowhere, attacks Cody. And then we get a sort of 5 or 6, 7, 8 minute beatdown of Cody, where The Rock is verbally abusing him as well at the same time as making him bleed in the rain, as we kind of alluded to earlier on in the show. Let's go for you, Alex. What did you make of all this?
Yeah, really good. Really, really good. A really good angle to build a Rock versus Cody Rhodes match at WrestleMania. I don't know how many times we have to say it. That aside, it was really good. I loved the the Rock whispering thing, because it was, you know, he come down, what's he going to say? And it, I mean, I agree, if that is what he said, that is absolutely phenomenal. And then I love the interference. I love anything like that with the interference, because it is, it just shows, it's like a little bit of like faction warfare in it, where they'll back up the mates. Yeah, I love all that stuff. And then Jimmy luring into the back, and then The Rock. Now, look, I have criticised The Rock all night long, but amazing, amazing. And that's what he should, that's The Rock. That is The Rock. We're heel Rock, all right? Just fucking kicks ass, talks smack, and makes people bleed. Amazing, amazing. Just amazing for a Cody Rhodes versus Rock match.
See, the reason I love that side of The Rock's character is I don't think we've seen it before. I genuinely think this is, there was elements of, I guess, the backlash of 99 when he threw Austin's title off the bridge to it, I guess. There was a bit of that because they kind of had a bit of a fight out there. But for me, this is a different Rock.
Well, there was a level of cruelty to it that I think we've only seen at the I Quit match with Mick Foley with the chair shots. Like, that's the only time I can really see him being that nasty and that violent.
Yeah, and I think that's what I really feel like this is a different Rock than we've seen before, and I'm all the way here for it. Mm. This is what I wanted to see from the beginning, is the Rock do something different and really turn it on, and he has in that last 5 minutes of after the Rock concert, and then this. I was like, this is the character. Psychotic Rock is great, especially if you really exaggerate Roman Reigns being the paranoid, insecure world champion. Those two next to each other is a mental mix of characterization that would have been so much fun had they concentrated on it, as they really digged it up, if they'd really figured out a way to actually play on that all the way through. But they haven't. They've had tiny, tiny moments where they've kind of played on it, but they should have been doing it the entire way through, because it would have been absolutely great to see. But this was a superb, superb piece of work, and it was like, finally we're seeing The Rock at his absolute best, and I said I'm all the way here for it. Like, I love it. His instincts in terms of this bit was great, because it did make you dislike him, and that's the entire point of who he's supposed to be right now, is someone you're supposed to dislike. And I thought, brilliant, this is what I wanted to see. So I loved it.
For those who potentially not all that familiar with his with the Rock's film catalogue, which not everybody is, admittedly, particularly when it comes to his Fast and the Furious appearances. He played a character called Luke Hobbs, who was like the sort of, you know, DEA police agent type guy. And for me, he's playing a psychotic version of that character. So if any of you have seen that, you might potentially have an idea. If not, there you go. Like I said, Luke Hobbs, that's what you can check out. But for me, like I said, he's playing a really over-the-top psychotic version of him. And it is phenomenal. You know, this is where I kind of feel like he's hit the peak of this, you know, final boss character and presentation. And I completely agree, Ben. I don't think this is a side of The Rock that we've seen before. You know, he's certainly been dangerous and that. But like, this is just another level. This is like completely psychopath Rock. And it's just great. He looks like a killer. He's acting like a killer. You know, the getting the Cody's blood, wiping on the belt, Mama Rhodes, I'm going to give you this belt, was just amazing. You don't fuck with the final boss. I mean, as somebody who's admittedly a real big gamer as well, the idea of a final boss, it's just so cool. It's just something that I resonate with. It's just so good. And, you know, the fact that it was done in the rain, yes, just looked so dramatic, and it was awesome. The fact you got Cody in this, you know, really nice suit, having his ass kicked on the floor, his cool suit is getting wet and damaged, it was great. The fact that The Rock was still wearing sunglasses while kicking his ass in the rain was just funny. It just was such a home run. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant segment. Not much to cover that hasn't already been covered, to be perfectly honest, but it was great. If they can keep The Rock working to this level, specifically working on this character, get rid of all the bullshit, quote-unquote comedy, then I'm in for it. And I want to see him get beaten up, which is what the purpose of it is.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and this is where I have a bit of an issue with Matt, when you were like, oh, it's been amazing, 10 out of 10, all that stuff, because I feel like it's been a missed opportunity. I think there have been bits where I've been like, yeah, this is perfectly entertaining, but it's just not, it feels like a missed opportunity. Loads of it have felt like a missed opportunity. This bit totally did not. This felt like, you know, not only are we getting The Rock seemingly firing on all cylinders, but also he's bringing back an edge that nobody else could bring back because they haven't got the power to do. But he's allowed to swear and to do everything else. And that's probably a little bit unfair. But at the same time, hell, who else would be able to bring it back? Who else would be able to bring back this harder edge to the product? Nobody. And so in every way for me, if we'd have been doing not exactly this, but stuff like this around this character from the start, we'd have been, well, I've had no issue with anything that happened so far.
I totally get that. I mean, for me, I just, a line that's just really stuck with me, and it's something that I've literally just taken completely literally, is when he was, what was sort of taking the piss and, you know, just sort of saying, just enjoy the ride that The Rock's going to take you on. And to be honest, for me, that's how I see it, you know. Regardless of what's happened, has there been holes? Yes. Has it been perfect? No. But I'm literally just, as far as I'm concerned, sitting back, enjoying the greatest to ever have done it. Who's not going to be here for very long. I'm loving it. I don't want it to end. I'm happy.
I do have a bit of an issue with the final boss thing. I love the character, and I do actually think it's a great moniker as well. But I also think, again, it flies completely in the face of what we're doing here, which is surely Roman is the final boss.
Yeah.
Not The Rock. Because Roman's the one who Cody will face in the main event of WrestleMania, at least, you know, week and a half out. That's what we understand to be the case.
Totally agree. And I think that's something that will come up.
Maybe. Yeah. And I hope that it does. I hope they do address that, because that would make sense. If then Roman was like, you know, you positioned yourself as the final boss, but I was the final boss. Then, yeah, I'm all for that. Totally. Okay, so we're at the point where we've got nothing else in terms of the build to talk about. We don't know what will happen. There could still be some very significant things that take place in the final three shows that are going to happen before WrestleMania, but after the point we've recorded this. But I'm going to go to now predictions and what we think is going to happen. So first of all, I'm going to ask each of you what's going to happen on night one in the tag team match, which presumably will be on night one. I can't see how they do. Think they have them do two matches in a night. So let's start with you, Alex. What do you think is going to happen on WrestleMania night one?
I think the Bloodline are going to win. The Rock and Roman are going to win on night one. I just think to build up night two, it makes more sense to have the heels go over. And, well, we'll come on to night two, but I think the Bloodline are going to win night one.
Tom?
Yeah, I don't see the point in putting the stipulation in there if you're not going to act on it. One thing I did want to cover, actually, about that last segment on Raw, apparently the showdown between Rock and Cody Rhodes, apparently, according to E-Wrestling News, I'm having a quick look at the report, it says, clearly he respects the tribal chief, but screwed him out of his dream and therefore hates his guts. Reigns must hate him too, because he and The Rock can't have this wank fest that they wanted at WrestleMania. Did Cody Rhodes actually refer to it as a wank fest?
Yes, he did.
That's amazing. Well, do you know what? I'm all in on Cody now.
Well, that's one of those things, though. This is the thing. Americans don't seem to understand the severity of the word wank.
No,
it's not a word you hear on British television, because it's, other than fuck and cunt, it's probably the worst swear word of all.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think so. You never hear it on TV, and I think it's because of that. Maybe shit.
You used to back in the day.
Did you?
I don't. Yeah, I think so. I'm sure Richie called Eddie a wanker and bottom.
No, I called him a tosser, not on TV. Yeah. You called him in the live shows. Well, live. A wanker.
No, he said, you ignorant English wankers.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe I watched too much of The In-Betweeners, but and maybe that's part of what they do. But, you know, they say wanker as much as they say hello.
Yeah.
Maybe, but the point is that it's a word, the only words that I think are less frequently used, other than kind of racial words or homophobic words, are fuck, cunt, and maybe shit. Mm. And I don't think, because wankfest wasn't beat out either. Whereas, you know, they beep out ass, and you're like, what's wrong with ass? Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
I don't think it's as severe in America, because it's in Friends as well.
They don't understand it.
It's not a word in America. It'd be the equivalent of being like, oh, shut up, you fucking jerk off.
Yeah, but they must know what it means, because, like I say, in this episode of Friends, Chandler says that's wank.
Yeah, but
he says just what a wank.
He does say what a wank.
Oh, and he uses it in the wrong context as well.
Yeah, and it's only really known in America as a British word.
Yeah.
Like, it's not known as a word in its own right. It's just known as a colloquial British word. But they don't realise, as a consequence, they don't know the severity of it. I find it very strange anyway.
Tell me, I hear it on TV all the time. Football.
No, that's true. So, Matt,
As far as to what's going to happen, haven't got a bloody clue. But I'm assuming the Bloodline will probably win night one, yeah, because of the stipulation. I would have thought so.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I don't think it makes any sense to end up with Cody and Roman one-on-one. Like, it feels like Cody has to overcome everything again. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a bit of a anticlimax. The only problem I have with it is that for me, the best story, if you are then at some point going to go to Rock versus Roman, the best way to start the build for that story is for them to lose on night one and Roman to have another reason to be annoyed with The Rock. Because I've always felt that The Rock should be pinned by Cody or Seth, and then that be the reason, or one of the reasons, why Roman's pissed off with The Rock, because he basically cost him the chance to do it Bloodline Rules. But ultimately, I think I agree. I think the Bloodline have to win for all the reasons you've said.
Yeah, and maybe, to be honest, that could be where you, as the main event on the second night goes to like a big old brawl and everything like that, that's when you have everyone else get involved as well, don't you? From like the babyface side, so you have Seth and Jey Uso and maybe even Sammy come in to try and even the odds up. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's where I feel like it's got to happen. I think you've got to have at least, you know, Jey and Seth involved in that point. So WrestleMania Night 2, let's have our predictions for that. Let's start with you this time, Matt.
I think even less so. I haven't got a flipping clue what's going to happen.
Who's going to win?
It's so hard to really gauge.
You're getting splinters in your backside from sitting on the fence so hard.
I know. For the longest time, I was thinking Cody, but as we get closer to the date, I've kind of flipped, and I'm thinking, I can't imagine what the reaction's going to be, but I'm thinking it's Roman.
Alex.
Right, do you want to know who's going to win or who I want to win?
I want to know what you think's going to happen.
I think we know both.
Well, what I think is going to happen is Cody Rhodes is winning.
Is that what you want to happen?
No.
What do you want to happen?
So this might be really controversial, okay? And bear in mind, if with a 39 night two, I was all over Cody winning, right? And when I did the Ultimate WrestleMania 40, same as Matt, I picked Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. And I think Cody Rhodes is the man to get the title. But this build, I don't personally, and I will say that this is an audience of one, okay? I personally don't want him to win the title as a result of this build. I think the build has been terrible. For a one-on-one match for the title, the main title, at WrestleMania Night 2 XL 40, whatever you want to call it, I think the build has been terrible. Granted, we've got a few shows left, but I don't want him to win it. I want him not with this build. And if I was fantasy booking, again, an audience of one, and I know Matt's going to fucking hate this.
I am too. I know what you're going to say. I'm going
to
hate
it. I'd have Damian Priest cash in to make it a triple threat right at the end, and I'd have him pin Cody, win the title, and then I'd... It is very ballsy and it's a bit of a risk, but I build it to Mania next year where it's Cody Rhodes versus Damian Priest Cody Rhodes is like, and you can sell it as he'll put his career on the line or whatever you want to do, and I'd have it because the build, and it's so, and I'm literally saying this because of the build of this year. I'm not invested. I'm nowhere near as invested as I was last year. I'm not bothered. And I was so bothered last year. Like I said in my review of 1939, 92, I was so bothered last year, and I'm not arsed this year.
My issue here is, Alex, you don't follow a really bad build with a really bad outcome. That is a really bad outcome. And this is the one time when me and Matt are 100% aligned. That cannot happen.
Nope.
So then, don't get me wrong, I think Cody's winning. I just don't want him to. If Roman wins, it's the same as last year. And I think
I need to calm down after that. Oh my God.
I get Alex, so you don't want him to win, but you cannot put Damian Priest in the mix here. It would just be an absolutely terrible finish to WrestleMania.
That would be the worst finish of WrestleMania history.
That WrestleMania 9 finish, mate, takes some fucking beating. To be honest,
he's not remotely at all.
How is it different from when Rollins did it? And that was amazing.
But let's be real here. When Rollins did it, it was at least the first time. At the very least, that was the case. And also, at the time, Roman Reigns, let's not forget, was the babyface. Nobody wanted him to win. That's the difference.
But it just shows, don't it, the bit, like I said, I was so invested in Cody Rhodes. I'm not arsed. I'm literally not bothered, which is such a shame. And it annoys me. It pisses me off because this is the match that I wanted. I wanted Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns. That's what I wanted. And I'm not arsed about it. And that's, for me, it's just a shame. It's such a shame.
Tom, what's your prediction?
I find this is really, really difficult to predict because I feel like the everything's pointing towards a Cody win. But what I'm a little bit unsure about is that where does this leave Roman Reigns afterwards as well? Like, what is he now? Because if he doesn't have the championship, then I kind of don't really see the point in him anymore. He's on a really reduced schedule at the moment, so he's barely on. And you can get away with doing that when you're the champ, but I don't know if he's old enough and really has the maybe the star power is the right word, I'm not sure, to be able to do that kind of comeback every couple of months, like, or every once a year, like Brock Lesnar did, you know, during his most recent run. So the only thing that makes me think that they might keep the belt on Roman Reigns is to basically keep him on TV and keep using him in the same way. But the reality is, I think that Cody Rhodes will still win anyway. And I think that this might be the beginning of the end of Roman Reigns as a, I know he's not full time at the moment, but as a permanent wrestler, would we say, and see him transitioning into something else like his estranged cousin.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the direction of the Roman Reigns character goes after WrestleMania. But I need them to tell the story well if they're going to do it. So my prediction for night two is that Cody will win. I think anything else but a Cody win here is just playing with too much fire. It's just, and I could see them being tempted given the way The Rock suddenly, like, it feels like The Rock has suddenly clicked. He's finally found the thing that makes him great again, to me anyway. And I, if I was watching, I was Triple H, I'd be like, well, how can I utilize this? Because surely The Rock, you know, you said, Matt, this is going to be the last Rock run. I don't think it will. And I think The Rock might stick around on a, not a regular basis, but an occasional basis for the rest of the year. Like, I could well see them trying to build something for next year's WrestleMania and have him maybe appear once every couple of months. And if if I was Triple H and that was the potential, I'd be rubbing my hands together. Cause I'm like, if I can keep The Rock doing this for the next year, love it. You know, that would be immense. So I think that's where Roman Reigns goes anyway, even if they end up having the match at SummerSlam, whatever. I think that's the direction. But I just think Cody has to win this one. I just think, you know, you tested people's patience last year, and I think people gave you the benefit of doubt. Not everybody, but a lot of people gave you the benefit of doubt because, you know, you'd wielded the stories running into WrestleMania 39 really well. But I think that this storyline has been so weird and all over the place that I think you now have to deliver and you have to swallow the fact that you're not going to get that moment with Cody that you really hoped that you could get. I think, to your point, Alex, regardless of whether Damian Priest cashes in or not, I don't think they can make this another year and get Cody round to it again. I don't think they can replicate what they potentially had at 39 now. I think they could have done had they just gone with Cody versus Roman and The Rock wasn't involved. But I think once The Rock got involved, they weren't going to recreate that because you've split the audience, because people are naturally going to like The Rock. There are people out there that just really love him, like Matt, for example. So you're always going to split the crowd in regards to The Rock coming in. So you're not going to recreate it. And I think if you give it another year, especially after what we've just seen, it's just not going to work. So do it now. Give him the benefit of the Roman Reigns, beating the Roman Reigns title long reign. And then let's draw a line under it. Because also we need to end, as you all said, we need to end this fucking story. Because it's just it. I've said before, I could have seen a way, a route to doing this over the course of 3 years. But we're past the point where that's possible now. We need to get it done now.
So we're split then, are we?
Yes, I think so. I think I've said, I can't even remember what everyone said. I've said,
and I think Cody.
I said Cody.
Yeah, okay, so we're
three of us think Cody. And
the Matt. Polar bear, obviously, is to say it again.
Just a feeling.
Yeah, and you know what? As I said, I could, now with The Rock doing what he's doing, I could almost entertain the notion just because I'm that interested to explore that character more. I guess a large part of this is how much of The Rock's time they've got after WrestleMania as well, which is just as important.
I'm just interested to see what happens to Coriander as well.
Yeah, I mean, that might be worth it just to see what kind of a breakdown he has this year.
I was going to say, I think part of it for me as well is the fact that I can't remember the stadium, but I'm sure it was like some massive stadium that they've booked SummerSlam. And I think they're trying to make SummerSlam this year be like that. I know they've tried to make like every event feel like a really big event recently, but I think they're trying to make that seem like a really huge almost WrestleMania type event as well, and they're going to need something for it. So
okay, so I've got two more questions on this particular match, and then we will definitely move on after over 2.5 hours
of talking. Oh God, I'm so sick of talking about these four cunts.
Two more questions. Will The Rock turn at WrestleMania?
Yes.
Tom thinks yes. Matt?
Yes.
Alex?
Only if, like you said, if they lose the match night one and Roman attacks him or whatever. But I don't know. Not bothered.
I have got a sneaking suspicion that he will, and I will hate it if he does.
Yeah.
I think that's a massive mistake if he does. First of all, it makes no sense in the context of everything we've seen, especially after the attack on Cody on Raw. Like, you can't do that and then be like, oh, I'm the babyface again. That's just stupid. And like, they're going to spin it like, oh yeah, so that's why I set up the tag team match in the first place, because then we could have bloodline rules and I could attack Roman in the middle of the match because it was no disqualification. That's how they're going to spin it. And I'd be like, no, that's stupid. That is so convoluted and crap. I do not want to see it. So I really hope they don't, but I have a sneaky suspicion they might have him do it, because I think ultimately The Rock wants to get back to being a babyface. I think, you know, it's more aligned with the public image he wants, him be acting as a babyface, even if he openly says on Twitter and various other public forums that he's playing a role. I think he it's more in line with his public image for him to be a babyface, and I think he wants to get back to it.
But I've got a question then. Which is the better finish? The Rock wrestling on night one, and then The Rock costing Roman the title and turning face, or my finish of Priest cashing in?
You're never going to convince me that Damian Priest is better than anything.
Are you joking? You think that The Rock turning after what he did on Monday is better finish than mine? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, because Damian Priest
is costing Roman Reigns would be better.
Right. That's absolute.
I want to say about this is that, and I don't agree in this, the reason Matt doesn't like the Damian Priest finish. He doesn't like it because I think Damian Priest is the main event guy. I think that's relatively irrelevant, to be honest, in this regard. It's just he's got no place in this match anywhere near it. It's nothing to do with him. This story is not, cannot conclude with Damian Priest coming out with champion as a champion. And it's not because I don't think he can be a champion. I think he can. I just don't want it to be anything to do with this match. So the second question I had was, will Seth Rollins turn?
Yes.
Oh, who gives a fuck?
No. Thank fuck. Finally. Because perhaps he might get rid of some of this absolute nonsense shit. You know, oh, look, I'm wearing stupid frigging clothes and this stupid song. Finally. Yes, please. Please turn the man.
I hate to tell you this, mate, but it's only going to be amped up even more if that's the case.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's natural heel stuff. Keep doing it.
And so. And the other thing is as well, and I'm sorry, but he's never going to change that music, because I think, was it Punk said, that's literally all you've got? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
He'll go eventually.
That would make no sense at all if Seth turned, because then we're assuming, well, I mean, I suppose we don't know what the split is, but I'm assuming the Seth Rollins Drew McIntyre match is on night two.
Yeah.
So do you mean he turns on night one?
No, I mean, does he turn anywhere? I don't know. It's up to you to decide. I could see a route where it would make sense if they lost the main event on night one, and then Rollins lost his title on night two, and was then bitter at Cody potentially finishing his story and then turning on him. But I would rather, again, I'd rather not have that turn. I'd rather, if you're going to have the turn, do it later, after Cody's won the belt, and then have maybe Seth try and get back his world title, can't do it, and then he turns on Cody, and almost like he's got a ready-made kind of, what have I got from all my helping you? I've got nothing. I've lost the world title. I've lost my rematch for the world title. You're now the world champion and the biggest star in the company. What have I got from helping you? That was the biggest mistake of my career. It writes itself, but I just don't want him to do it at WrestleMania. I think we need to get through WrestleMania without any turns, then tell the stories of Roman and Rock going up against each other and Seth and Cody going up against each other. And I'm fine with that. Just don't do it at WrestleMania for me.
It makes sense with Seth turning as well, considering how many times like Cody's beaten him as well. You know, but I think perhaps maybe they'll save it for the next night on Raw.
Maybe. I would go longer. I'd have Seth start to show signs of being really frustrated by it all, but tell that story a little bit more cleverly and a bit more with a bit more kind of, you know, just a bit more sophistication. Like, have him try to, even if it's he has a number one contenders match on Raw and doesn't win it, and that frustrates him more because he gets further and further away from the title that he thought was his. Just don't do it too soon. Like, give us the story. Tell the story. Make these characters go through a journey that takes us to another place, rather than just do the wrestling thing, which is the sudden surprise turn, which is just shit. So that's all the questions I had for that particular match and everything I wanted to cover. We've gone a fair way through this show talking about those four people, as Tom said. So what I'm going to do, I guess we ought to very quickly touch upon Seth Rollins' match against Drew McIntyre. And what I will say, and this is going to piss Matt off and maybe placate Alex a little, this is where I could entertain a Damian Priest cash in a little bit. I'd rather they didn't, but I could still entertain it in this match, if I'm honest.
That's a fair point. I don't want it at all. I think he should be one of the guys who fails with the cash in, to be perfectly honest, because I just don't think he's remotely anywhere near that level. I don't even think he's the most over person in his own group, but whatever, that's personal opinion. If they were to do it there, okay, again, not for me, but I can kind of see it. But I think everybody probably knows where I want to go. I want to see a Drew McIntyre win for me.
Yeah, I want to see Drew win it. And I think his work has been sensational since he turned heel. Like, he's been absolutely fantastic. He's been everything a heel should be. He's been obnoxious. He's been this, someone you can't really bring yourself to like. But at the same time, you feel like he feels justified in doing what he's doing. And if you feel like he's got a real motivation behind what he's doing, it's perfect.
Reminds me of Brett 97.
Yeah, I can see that.
The second he referred himself to DM Hunk, I was like, yeah, brilliant. I want him to win. And it's a match that I don't really have too much of a dog in the fight of, because I'm not fans massively of either of these characters, but I don't necessarily need Seth Rollins to still be holding the other major championship. So yeah, give it Drew.
Drew driving around the car park of the arena a couple of weeks ago blasted CM Punk's music. It was fucking hilarious.
See, the thing with the cash in that I will say sort of makes me think it should happen at WrestleMania is that Damian Priest would be foolish not to cash in on either Seth or Cody if they won the belts, given that both would have been through two matches on consecutive nights by that point. So, for example, Seth and Cody have their match on night one, then Seth faces Drew McIntyre. Even if he wins, he's gonna be fucked. So of course it would be foolish of Damian Priest not to cash in. Same would go for Cody, which is why I'm kind of like, I would entertain the idea of a Damian Priest cashing on Seth, because I really don't want him anywhere near the main event.
With regarding the cash in, Martin, you said that you want Damian Priest to fail. That is 100% not happening, because they made a shit show of it last year. They made a shit show where Austin Theory cashed in on the fucking US title and lost. So they've got to build some credibility back up with that briefcase. They've got
to. That's why I think that he should fail, because I don't think they should do the same thing every year, every single time somebody wins. You've got to have something different in there to, because let's face it, Money in the Bank at this point is relatively predictable. Somebody will get it, world champion, great. And all right, okay, for a while that's worked. But this is why I think every now and again you need to have somebody to fail. Hasn't happened in a while. This is the guy to do it with.
It happened last year for the US title and it made no sense. Why would you cash in on a US title when you've got an opportunity to go for the biggest title? That's what I mean. It doesn't make any sense. That's why I think that he's going to cash in. Just regarding the match, like, for the out of the two titles, it's obviously the worst title out of the two main titles. But I think the build has been fucking miles better for this match than the Cody Rhodes Roman Reigns, because at least there's been build to it. And Drew McIntyre's been fantastic. Seth Rollins, I think, has been fantastic. I think even CM Punk's been fantastic with the limited involvement that he's had in it. He's going on commentary. I think that's brilliant. I think it's a really good, a genius move, because they'll have his entrance at WrestleMania. I think the build has been fantastic. And to be fair, it's all been Drew McIntyre. Not all of it, but the majority of it has been Drew McIntyre. I think he's been brilliant and I want him to win. But this is the thing. I don't want Damian Priest to cash in on this title because I want Drew McIntyre to win, because he's been fantastic.
Yeah, but I think the big part of that is, and there still may never be an official word on this, but there's still some question about whether Drew's actually signed with WWE or not, because his contract's up. So, that might be the deciding factor. I suspect he has signed it and they just haven't released any, and maybe signed it months ago, but they just haven't released any official word on it, because why would you? Actually add some intrigue around it to some people who are a bit more insider. You don't need to mention it on screen, and you don't have to put anything out there either off screen either, so that you can kind of like have it always. You can do a bit of insider stuff without actually doing insider stuff, which I am for when they kind of use insider stuff in a way that doesn't impact the canon that they've presented. And this is one of those point. So I think they've probably signed, but if there is still any truth to the rumor that he might not have signed, or there's still a question whether he's going to sign, then that might affect whether he can win this match or not.
I'm assuming that Drew and Punk over the summer is potentially the goal that they go, they're working towards anyway. So I'm assuming that Drew probably gets it, and that's the next direction.
The way I would still say, the way I would go with Damian Priest's Money in the Bank cash in is to just have it so that maybe he hesitates a couple more times over the next couple of months, and then we get to the point where he's got to figure out a way to cash it within a month because Money in the Bank's coming up, and they have this whole thing where he's like, will he, won't he? And then it's every single time the champion's on screen, there's a question that Damian Priest might come out, and maybe he does another couple of times and still kind of doesn't do it, and you're almost getting right up to the pay-per-view itself, and maybe the SmackDown before, he basically is forced into doing it, and that maybe is how he fails, because he has to do it in a way that's not particularly favorable to him. Like, that would for me be a good way, a new way to make someone fail, and I could live with that very well. But and they could have him succeed as well, maybe in some way, but just really take it right up to the deadline so that you really are pushing something different and something that we haven't explored before, which is the expiration of that contract.
Did one of you boys say the idea of having a countdown on the screen at all times would be really fun? Did someone say that? Or maybe I'm thinking of something else, but the idea of having a Damian Priest, like a countdown to when he can cash in, and that would be really fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily put a countdown, but I definitely would put on a graphic regularly when he's on screen or when they're talking about him, how many days he's got left. Mm. That would be really cool. I think that would be a really good way of doing it.
Showing me fanboy side, when you did the squashing, you did the five ways that the Money of the Bank has never been cashed in, like a bit of fantasy booking. I'm pretty certain you said something about a countdown. I mean, you said that idea about, it's a fantastic idea, get it right to the end. Mm. And I'm sure you said something there about a countdown intermittently coming up.
So what I want to move on to, I was actually going to go to you, Matt, and say, because you've obviously, by the sounds of things, you've followed this closer than anybody, any one of us, basically, you've been watching pretty much religiously. What do you think is the next thing we should talk about in terms of the rest of WrestleMania? Because we can probably go for another 40 minutes, but you know, we're still limited by how much we're going to be able to cover.
I'd probably say Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley is probably one of the, certainly one of the bigger matches on the card. And you know, I can see Tom shaking his head, but
I'm not shaking my head at you, Matt. It's about something that's boiling my piss, but please carry on.
Fair enough. But yeah, I think that's, you know, considering that, you know, how Becky is seen within the company as one of the biggest stars they've got, her versus Rhea is a big time match at the moment. For me personally, I kind of feel that Becky's cooled off a little bit. So I could kind of see a Rhea Ripley win here. And I think that's probably the best way to go, actually, because I think Rhea's probably at the peak of her powers at the moment. And I think a win for her will really solidify her as one of the very top ones that they've got. Given both of their track records as well, I mean, I think this could really, really tear the house down, actually. And for me, it felt a little bit cold up until Raw last week. The promo between the pair of them, Becky getting super emotional, you know, talking about her daughter. You could tell that, you know, with her tears in her eyes, she was nearly making Rhea cry. You know, Becky punching Dom with one of the best damn punches I've seen in a long time was great. The idea of Dom being potentially involved in this, I think, potentially makes it even more entertaining. I think this could be a really, really good match, actually.
Tom, what's boiling your piss?
Right, it's kind of ties into this, but we are under 2 weeks away from WrestleMania, and the fact that Bianca Belair doesn't have a match at the moment makes me feel physically sick. And I'm sorry, but it should be Rhea Ripley versus Bianca Belair for the title in this match. And the reason why I say that is that they are, in my opinion, the two biggest female stars in WWE. They've just been given the 2K cover, which is a big deal in the company. They've just given Bianca Belair her own TV show with Montez Ford. They wheel her out for everything, all the press stuff. That is the biggest match that you could have in the women's division. And like you said, Tinky, when I think it was me, you and Matt, we did our AEW to WWE and vice versa draft bonus episode. Mm. Like, what else is there for Becky to do? Like, she's done everything. Like, I really don't see the benefit of this. And the fact is that I think she's in there because she was in that six-person tag last year. I think that's like you weren't involved in like a title match last year. You were involved in a match with Trish and Lita, so we're going to make it up to you this year by putting you in the championship match. And that's what it reeks of to me, rather than it being what I think should actually be the biggest match.
I think she's in there because she's got a book out.
I think she's the biggest star.
Who, Becky Lynch?
Yeah.
Nah.
nowhere near as big as Rhea Ripley.
I love Bianca Belair. Becky's bigger than Bianca Belair.
I don't agree with that, but yeah, it's not really, that's not really the issue for me. I actually would have much rather see Bianca Belair against Rhea Ripley, simply because I just think it looks like a better match to me. I have not been, and to be honest, it's not entirely fair because I've not watched a lot of what Becky Lynch has done, but since she came back from maternity leave, I've not been overly impressed by Becky in general. I found her relatively cringy on the mic in general. I find her work is okay. Now, when she was the man and she was building up to WrestleMania 35, yeah, I was like, she's excellent, she's amazing, love it, absolutely fantastic. And then they kind of botched that for me by having the triple threat match in the main event. Should have just been Becky and Ronda, and that's it. And since then, it's just, even since then, really, to me, it's just not been the same. And I think we're past Becky a bit, to be honest. I think that the people have moved on. I don't think Becky is the biggest. I think Rhea and Bianca are both bigger than her, to be honest, personally. But that's just me.
Yeah, but that's why I was shaking my head, because I just think I'd be capable of having a good match. I just feel like the bigger match would have been her versus Bianca Belair, and the fact that, and I'm just, I was fuming at the Elimination Chamber. What? I was absolutely fuming at that.
Do you know what? I have a funny feeling, and I'm so hopeful for this. Here's an early prediction for next year. I think they're holding off next year for Bianca versus Jade Cargill next year, and I'd be fucking all for that.
But fine that they're holding off for that, but why does that mean that Bianca Belair doesn't get anything to do with this year's WrestleMania?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that, don't get me wrong, I do feel that she should have something to do, but again, it's, and I've said this before, not everybody can be on WrestleMania.
I agree, but that's the thing, because not everyone can be on it, Bianca should be in this match.
I think Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair is definitely the bigger match, and that it should be the match. And also, I think Bianca Belair, from what I've seen, is helping out Bayley, isn't she? She keeps into, because Bayley's fighting damage control, she keeps kind of interfering. That would make much more sense if Becky Lynch was in that role. Much more sense, because of the history that Bayley and Becky have got. It would be a bit like the Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn thing. They've got this rivalry side, and it would make much more sense. And Bianca Belair versus Rhea Ripley is the bigger match.
I'll tell you one thing I do think they've done really well with this match in particular is Rhea Ripley, in the build up to the Elimination Chamber, they had her not appear at all with the Judgment Day, because they wanted to present her as the babyface going up against Nia Jax in the main event of that show. The next night on Raw, she suddenly started appearing with the Judgment Day again, and I was like, that's perfect, because they felt like they had to make Rhea Ripley a babyface for one night, simply because it was in Australia and she was the big star and everything. But they've been able to flip her back really quickly, simply by association with the Judgment Day. I think that's been really astute booking.
Yeah, the way they present Rhea Ripley is excellent. And my prediction is that she wins. I think she has to.
Yeah, I agree too.
I think Rhea's going to win that one. Alex, do you want to pick out anything else you'd like to talk about with this regards to this WrestleMania? We're not talking about The Rock anymore.
Right, yeah, I will do. And this is another rant that brings it down to a 3 for me. And I never thought I'd say this. Gunther versus Sami Zayn, okay? Intercontinental Championship. I've been so impressed with Gunther, all right? And when Sami Zayn won the opportunity, the gauntlet match to get the Intercontinental Championship, they had the contract signing, I was well on for it. I was thinking, this is going to be fantastic. Well up for watching this match. And this was one of the only ones that I was really invested in. And then I watched Raw, and Sami Zayn got beat clean in the ring by Bronson Reed. And I just think, so how am I supposed to believe that this person is going to beat Gunther, the Intercontinental, if he can't beat Bronson Reed? Now, don't get me wrong, Bronson Reed's massive. He's a fantastic wrestler, really, but don't have him fucking win. Don't have him lose. Or have him lose with some shenanigans or something, but he just got pin cleaned in the ring. He hated it. Just fucking hated it. So straight away, I've gone, right, well, I can't be arsed watching that match. Gunther's going to win. Easy, because why should I believe that Sami Zayn's going
to
win?
I'm starting to think 3 was generous, Alex. I think
maybe it was.
One or two.
Maybe it was.
Minus 7, I think, is the correct score.
There's only literally 1-2 matches that I'm really looking forward to, so maybe a 2 out of 10. I'm going down to a 2.
Matt, I know that you were quite strong, had some strong feelings about this in terms of who Gunther should face at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Sami Zayn has definitely dipped in popularity between now and last year. I mean, I think most people can agree on that, is that he's not anywhere near as popular as he was, which is a massive shame, to be honest. I mean, they put him with Gunther when he was that hot, could have been something really good. The one thing that I do think that has kind of made me change my mind just a little bit as of late is I think that Chad Gable is going to have a little bit of a bigger role in this than I perhaps thought. Like, because to me, it kind of looks as if they're potentially sort of inserting Chad Gable as almost like a teacher type thing. And he's trying to coach Sami Zayn into how to beat him. And for me, that potentially has legs. So the fact if they could potentially go with that in a long-term thing, I can kind of get on board with that because I really like Chad Gable. I think the matches he's had with Gunther have been great. Ideally, I would have liked to have seen him in the one-on-one sort of spot, and I think he potentially would have gotten more from a victory over Gunther than Sami would. But with his involvement in it, I think, yeah, this could start to be something a little bit better. It could be interesting.
Tom, have you got any thoughts on this one?
They're two very reliable hands in the ring. Sami Zayn can play that plucky underdog babyface against the kind of the all-encompassing brute that is Gunther. So I think this could be quite a fun match, and I'm quite looking forward to it. I think Gunther will win, though, and keep his title for a bit longer.
I think they're seeing this as the wrestling match of the show. Arguably two of the best wrestlers they've got facing each other in the ring. And I think, I agree, Tom, I think Gunther's going to win. And I don't think Gunther's going to lose the Intercontinental title. I think he's going to end up giving it up.
Mm.
And to me, that makes perfect sense. Because let's say Cody wins the title at the end of the night, right? Gunther is surely a great opponent, a great monster opponent for him to face. And it's a much better story if Gunther never loses the Intercontinental title.
Yes, that's true, yeah. Yeah. I like that.
So, you know, I a lot of people have been talking about who's going to get the benefit of beating Gunther. I don't think anyone is. I think he may even win the world title and then just give up the Intercontinental title because he can't have both or something like that, like they've done before in the past.
Like the Ultimate Warrior.
Like the Ultimate Warrior, absolutely. Yeah, so that's how I see that one going out. Alex, did you have a prediction?
Gunther's going to win. I'll tell you what I predict, and it'll fucking bore me pissed if it happens, if it turns into a triple threat with Bronson Reed or a fatal four-way with Chad Gable as well, which that won't surprise me if that happened, and that'll be really shit. And then my interest would go down to a one.
And that would be really shit for me as well, because I think I could well see them then having someone win the title without beating Gunther,
yeah,
which would be even shitter in my view. Matt, any thoughts? Gunther.
I don't see them going that way, to be honest. And I, of all the people who I think would, other than possibly Sami Zayn, he's perhaps maybe Jey Uso might get the Intercontinental title win. I don't know.
I don't think anyone's going to beat Gunther. I really don't. Do we think that Chad Gable is not going to be on this card, or is just going to be associated with this match in some way?
I think he might be in Sami's corner or something like that. I do think they're planting the seeds for something there.
And is Otis injured, or is that just, are they just not using him at the moment?
I don't know that he's injured unless they're just not using him.
I thought, in the ladder match qualification, which we'll can get onto that as well, it was the Alpha Academy, but it was Otis and Tozawa. So I'm assuming that Tozawa's joined the Alpha Academy.
Oh yeah, he has. Yeah, he's been there for a while.
All right, yeah. But,
I'm looking at the SmackDown ladder match thingy. I can't see them in anywhere.
No.
They lost it, but it wasn't long ago. It was only last week.
They were in a qualifying match for a year.
Yeah, yeah. They did lose, but only last week.
So before the first round, they were in a qualifying match, were they?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay, I'll have to take your word for that. Yeah, it just feels like, given that they've got six... that was where I was a bit confused. They've got six men, they've got six teams in a ladder match at WrestleMania, and they're not in it, which seemed bizarre to me, Chad Gable and Otis. But I guess if they feel like it's more valuable to have Chad Gable associated with the Gunther-Sami Zayn match, then that makes some sense. Tom, have you got anything you want to pick out from the rest of the show?
Not hugely. The only thing I will kind of, just because I don't think I've had much of a chance to moan about it, but I wanted to kind of touch on Jey versus Jimmy Uso. I think Jey Uso should win. I'm hoping we're getting more Brett versus Owen than Matt versus Jeff at this WrestleMania. I think it could potentially be a really good match. It could be a lot of fun, especially if they kind of make it, maybe put like a stipulation in it. But ultimately, the reason I wanted to mention it is that this shouldn't be happening in the first place, because they should never have split up. But I think this match could be quite entertaining.
All for it. I think it'll be good. Yeah, I kind of feel it had to happen, the way the kind of bloodline split has gone. So yeah, all for it.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good match. I agree, they should, you know, they shouldn't have split up, but they have done. There was always going to go with this WrestleMania 40 match with these two, and I think it'll be really good.
Can I just say, I don't think they should have split up, but I think I could have lived with it if they did it in a different way. I just hated the way they did it.
Yeah.
I really felt like Roman Reigns should have just beaten Jace clean and then maybe had Jimmy come out and not in the night, but like later on Raw or SmackDown or somewhere, and then turned on him for some, and then but then they needed to have lined up a proper explanation, and they haven't, I don't believe, explained why Jimmy rejoined the Bloodline either. Really. No.
And they're both low key quite good talkers, so they could do that, let that storyline play out.
So can we have your predictions for Jimmy versus Jay?
Jay.
I think Jimmy's gonna win it.
The polar bear. I just
think they've really set Jay up as the better of the two up to this point. So I think Jimmy needs the win. Like, Jay's always been portrayed as the better wrestler of the two, and now I think Jimmy needs the win as a consequence of that. Anyway, we'll see. We don't know what night any of these are going to be on as well. This is the weird thing. Like, I don't know whether that's going to be night one or night two, and that might play into some way what happens on in the main events. We've got LA Knight versus AJ Styles.
Who gives a fuck about this match?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
Great angle on Friday, though, where he got arrested at AJ Styles' house. I thought it was pretty good. But other than that, yeah.
I mean, the thing that's really been said about LA Knight is he has massively suffered in the shadow of The Rock being around. Because obviously, you know, I remember last year someone said, all LA Knight does is just The Rock and Austin. I was like, yeah, but if you're going to use a template, use the biggest two stars in the world. Like, that's not a criticism as far as I'm concerned. That makes perfect sense.
See, I slightly disagree with that, because I've long thought about this, because people always use like the Hogan, taking parts of like superstar Billy Graham's character and stuff like that. But he then used those parts of it and elevated it up and became bigger than the people who he was.
Sure, but I mean, like,
I just think LA Knight's shit.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is LA Knight. Maybe that's an argument for it. Like, if LA Knight really is shit, he managed to parlay the act that he came up with into pretty important man most of the last year. So I actually think, again, like, if you're expecting him to be the next Hogan, then sure, it's not worked. But if you're expecting him just to be someone who was over and people were invested in, it worked a treat. So I don't have a problem with him taking stuff from The Rock and Austin personally. But the problem is now The Rock's turned up, it really does show that it isn't at the same level or same quality.
I think that whoever wins this match, we all lose.
The only problem I've got with this is I kind of feel they're going the same way the Triple H Randy Orton went all them years ago. It is that they did the whole home invasion type thing, and the way they've elevated this is like they shouldn't be settled in just a straight one-on-one who's the better man type competition. This needs to be like a no DQ type match, and I don't think they're doing that. So this could be one of those times where I could see this being like a DQ finish, but I just think they should just make it like a no disqualification match or something.
There's still time for that.
Maybe.
Yeah. They could add something to the stipulation. Personally, I would make it Falls Count Anywhere and then do the thing they did with Mankind and Triple H, where basically they have them come out first on night one. They start fighting. They brawl all over the arena. They brawl outside the arena to the point where the cameras can't even follow them. And then effectively they just keep coming back every like 20 minutes or every half an hour. That would be great. Just run through night one and maybe finish the match before the main event, and then you do the main event.
Finish the match in night two. Like, they'd be going all day.
That's another way to do it, but I think that would perhaps go a little bit too far. But yeah, I'd just like them to do something like that, you know. And they could then continue that feud going on, couldn't they? We've also got Logan Paul versus Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens for the United States title.
Triple threat. It's just lazy.
I don't care about the fact that it's a triple threat. It's about three people I'm completely indifferent towards at the moment. Like, I think Logan Paul is naturally very gifted and very talented, but I fundamentally dislike him as a person. Randy Orton is Randy Orton. Do you know what I mean? He's just been around for ages. You know exactly what you're going to get. And Kevin Owens, I've always liked Kevin Owens, but it's just going to be the same. So I kind of know already what we're going to get from this match. We're going to get Randy Orton plodding around the ring and doing a couple of RKOs. We're going to get Kevin Owens talking some trash and hitting that impressive exploder suplex and his bullfrog splash, and Logan Paul doing something mad and maybe KSI getting involved. Do you know what I mean? Like that, and that's what we're going to get from it. And it's for the United States Championship, which is a title that I don't think needs to exist anymore. Don't really care about this at all.
I mean, for me, Randy Orton, God bless him, is as dull as dishwater these days. There's just something that I just find that he's just boring. So I can't say that I'm particularly excited about Randy Orton being involved in this. But Paul and KO, I feel, had quite a good bit of chemistry at the Royal Rumble. So I'm actually quite hopeful that this could be something decent. And in all fairness to Paul, I think whenever it's counted, he's always delivered. And I could easily see him doing it again. So I think a lot of people are sleeping on this, but it could be decent.
Question for you. Is it as dull as dishwater or as dull as ditch water?
I said, well, I was going with dishwater.
Yeah, I know. I don't know which one it is. And I've just looked it up and I think they both are the same thing.
I think
they're both the same. From my perspective, this is the definition of why I don't like triple threat matches, because it's lazy, because it's clear that they wanted Logan Paul versus Kevin Owens and they just wanted to extend what they did from the Rumble and didn't know how to do it other than to add somebody else. And that's what they have historically used triple threat matches for. And that's why I don't like them, because they're boring and lazy. Like, Logan Paul should just be facing one of them.
I agree completely. And do you know what I would have done as well? Because there was a bit of a shit finish at the Rumble. I'd have had another match at Elimination Chamber and maybe had that a shit finish possibly. And I'd have had this one-on-one in a ladder match and got rid of the fucking ladder stipulation from the tag team match. And then you could have a little bit of a spot fest, because I'd rather watch two people in a ladder match than fucking 12.
Cool. Well, I can just feel the absolute anger dripping off of Alex. Like, it's mad.
The smoke coming off the top of his head.
Yeah, the way he's acted during this podcast, he's become at least 20% less attractive than he normally is.
Oh no! Oh, I can't wait for this WrestleMania. It's going to be amazing.
Seeing as you brought it up, let's talk about the six pack tag team ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship. I mean, if there's a title that has dropped in significance more than this particular title in the last 12 months has, I'd love to know about it, because that is an absolute fall from grace. Matt, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, you're right. And this is why I think it's the perfect match to do the ladder match with, because a lot of people, particularly a lot of older fans, will kind of think, ooh, tag team titles, ladder matches, ooh, TLC, and we'll kind of think of that sort of vibe. And I think maybe that's kind of what they're shooting for. I think this is probably tailor-made for Miz and Truth to win, which, okay, I mean, I'm not the biggest Truth fan in the world, but in all fairness, I think a lot of people would actually enjoy to see him and Miz get the win. For me, the main thing that I'm happy about, again, I think as everybody knows, I'm one of the world's biggest Johnny Gargano fans. I love Tommaso Ciampa. So to see DIY finally at WrestleMania, for me, is awesome. I would have loved to have seen them versus Judgment Day one-on-one instead. I'm glad they're in it. It'll probably be a spot fest, but I think it probably could be good with all the guys involved.
Tom, I think you're looking at the same Wikipedia page as I am with the brackets and everything. Can you make head nor tail of it? I cannot figure out for the life of me how this works, because there's only one space left in the match.
There's two, I think.
What is? Well, maybe that's the problem. Oh, yeah, no, I see. So basically, there are two tournaments that are going on simultaneously.
Yeah.
And there are two finals and two of those. I get it now. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah.
So we've got to expect in the Street Profits to be one of the teams that are added to this, right? I mean, it would be an absolute disgrace if A Town Down Under got through and the Street Profits didn't.
Yeah, and I reckon New Catch Republic might be the other team.
I'd have thought so.
I think this could be all right. Like, I'm not as down on it as I think Rockstar is going to be, but I think it'll be quite fun. I think changing the format up from what used to be, you know, the normal Money in the Bank kind of match, I think it could be a bit of fun. I like the fact there's been a tournament to go into it. It'd be quite nice if one of the teams who won the tournaments went on to win it. I think that'd be quite interesting. Personally, I would like to see New Catch Republic win, because I quite like Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate from what I've seen of them. Come on, we need some fucking English in this as well, don't we? To really put for us. But I think it should be quite fun. Part of me would love to see R-Truth and The Miz win. Maybe the Judgment Day losing their titles could be the fuel that leads Damian Priest to cash in at the end of the night. So we can only hope, Alex.
I think if you watch the Fatal 4-Way Ladder Match from WrestleMania 33, and then you watch the WrestleMania Showcase from last year's Night 1, right, and you'll see why fucking ladder matches, multi-man ladder matches, with the exception of Money in Bank, have just had the day. Last year, that tag match, the WrestleMania Showcase match, was absolutely phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. And it wasn't there wasn't a ladder in sight. So if you're going to do multi-person, and I don't think you should, tag team titles, it should be 2-on-2. I'd rather see DIY versus Judgment Day. I'm with you on that. But if you're going to do a multi-person tag team match, just pick four teams and just do that, because it'd be miles better. It would be miles better. There's 12 people in this match. It's just fuck it. I mean, we've seen Money in the Bank matches at WrestleMania with 10 people, and it's too many.
In fairness, Alex is making your point, Matt, because this is the match where they're just trying to get as many people on the show as possible.
Yeah, and like I said, I 100%, I would have rather seen DIY Judgment Day, which is the one point where I felt they were going, but they're not. So.
I would have rather them, because I've got to be honest, I've got to a point in my life where actually I want to see great matches, don't get me wrong, but match quality in general just doesn't really make a difference to me. It's a bit done, you know what I mean? Like, how much further are we going to be able to go in terms of great matches? They're only great matches for me now if they've got something behind them, if there's a story that is playing into it. So for me, I'd just rather seen the Judgment Day versus Awesome Truth. This is the story they've been telling for months, yeah. Is R-Truth and the Judgment Day. Just do that. I know, like, The Miz and R-Truth are The Miz and R-Truth, but that's the story you've been telling, so just do it. Just do that match. I don't care if the match isn't great. That's the story. That's the feud. Just do that as a match. You can have the other tag teams in another, and you don't have to call it WrestleMania Showcase, Matt, but in another match like that where you have four different teams and they can just have a match. But this should just be the Judgment Day versus the Awesome Truth.
Be a whole other pod if we end up going down that rabbit hole again.
Well, exactly. So very quickly, we have one more match, I think, to talk about, which is Io Sky versus Bayley. I think this was a match I predicted as part of our WrestleMania, whatever we called it. Can't remember anymore. Fantasy booking for WrestleMania 40 in September. It was pretty obvious, though, I think. Io Sky had only recently won the title, and they were always going to go in this direction, I think. Yeah, I haven't seen much of the build for this one.
There hasn't been that much, which is why I was going to say this is actually, I think it's been quite disappointing. There was the initial sort of reveal by Bayley of who she was going to face, which I thought was very well done. And then after that, it kind of fizzled. I mean, they had, you know, Dakota Kai end up, you know, sort of turning and, you know, again, aligning with the rest of Damage Control. But I don't think this was anywhere near the level that it could have been, and is a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I thought the reveal was quite good. The bit where Bayley was like, "Oh yeah, I speak Japanese," was quite cool. I thought that was really good, and her turning baby, or kind of turning on them and slightly turning babyface, is good. I think this is a Bayley win. I don't think there's. I think give it to Bayley. She's one of the best wrestlers in the company, and has been for a while. One of the best characters as well. I think she's brilliant, and I think she'll win the title.
Has she gone back to full-on Bayley with the wacky way?
No, they need to do that. People have asked for that, yeah.
They need to do
the hugger.
Yeah, get her full-on back to Bayley, the hugger. I'd be well up for that, and give her the victory. This is clearly the secondary women's title match, so let's not stand on ceremony and be like, oh, it's got to be super serious. Let's just have some fun, get Bayley down there, and everyone have a bit of nostalgia fun and give her the win.
Agreed.
I've changed my mind. I think this should be the match that Damian Priest cashes in. No, Bayley, I agree with everything. I think Bayley. I'm not, you know, massively invested in the match. Don't really know that much about the build. I know Bianca Belair's been involved somewhere, so she's probably going to be at ringside. So yeah, same. Just give Bayley the win.
So that's all the matches that have been announced. I don't know, or I can't think of anything else that's going to be, but you guys might know better than me. Is there anything else that we think is probably going to be announced for the show?
The only thing we haven't done is the prediction for the ladder match.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Awesome Truth for me.
Awesome Truth.
One of the tournament winners.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that too, and I'm going to go with the same. I'm going with New Catch Republic. Other matches that we think might happen.
I wonder if there's going to be a tag match bundled in together with, you kind of mentioned it earlier, but with maybe Bianca and Jade. Maybe Jade makes a debut at WrestleMania and they tag against either Chelsea Green and someone. Do you know what I mean? And Tiffany Stratton, I don't know.
It's got to be Natalia. She needs another new partner. Yeah, yeah. A different one every single year.
Yes.
Yeah, there's going to be some Jade Cargill appearance, I think. And I'm sure Charlotte is meant to be on SmackDown either this week or next week, which is a bit, I was wondering why that was. So unless maybe they do like a face-off between the pair of them or something.
Yeah, Cargill's been advertised for Raw as well. Is it Raw or SmackDown? She's been advertised soon.
Yeah, for SmackDown. Yeah.
SmackDown.
So officially signed with SmackDown. She's now on the SmackDown
brand. Yeah. She isn't, she?
It's a strange time to introduce a wrestler, though. A week before WrestleMania. I'd have waited till after, personally.
Same.
It's a strange time. Okay, well, that sounds like we've covered everything then, unless anyone's got anything else they think might happen at WrestleMania, but it doesn't sound like it.
Pure excitement.
So, well, there we go. I did say it was the big WrestleMania preview, and I wasn't lying. We've gone for over 3 hours. This is going to end up being one of the longest shows we've ever done, even after I edit it down. So well done, guys. Well done for getting all the way through. Well done, Alex, for managing to just about keep his anger levels below kind of, yeah, you know, erupting. And well done, Matt, for continuing to dig in and be the polar bear that we all know and love. Thank you also, Tom, for you're taking a break of your very busy schedule of, you know, rearing two children and trying to bring them up. It's a tough world. Thank you, all of you.
Yeah, cheers. It's a pleasure to be back. Hopefully I'll be back at some point in the future. But lovely to speak to you boys, as always.
An XL podcast for an XL WrestleMania.
Love that. Been loads of fun, guys. Always.
Yeah. Let's crack our bells, boys.
We'll be back again next week with another special episode of the Random Wrestling Review. And then, of course, we'll be covering both nights of WrestleMania 40. But until all that, take care.